Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
Back in your life on this Monday, November 18th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well on this Monday afternoon. We have a lot to discuss. We are entering a bit of a quiet time in the world of UFC, coming off the UFC in Sao Paulo, somewhat of a lackluster event. Not too many exciting things happened. Of course, Jan Błachowicz defeated Jacare Souza in the main event via decision. And there wasn't a lot to write home about as far as that fight is concerned. Błachowicz saying that, you know, he wants next. I don't think that was the kind of performance that gets him that title shot against John Jones, but we shall see. It looks like Dominic Reyes is the front runner right now for Johnny Bones Jones. Paul Craig fought Mauricio Shogun Hua to a split draw. The star of the evening, without a doubt, was Charles Oliveira, who defeated Jared Gordon. The first round via knockout, what a great performance that was. And so there were some nice performances sprinkled throughout, as you can see right over here. Also on the prelims, James Krause with a nice victory, Ricardo Ramos with a nice victory, Francisco Trinaldo, Randy Brown had a nice victory as well. So that was the last UFC event for 2 weeks. But of course, on this program, we don't take any breaks. We have a lot to discuss as we head into the final month of the year. Let me run down today's lineup, and then we shall get to our first guest of the day. I am looking forward to this show very much. We've got a nice mix of characters and some potential news breaking as well. At 4 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Bo Nickel, who's a three-time NCAA wrestling champion from the Penn State University squad, 2017 to 2019. Most notably, the 2019 Hodge Trophy winner for most outstanding collegiate wrestler of the year. That is a very prestigious, pretty much like the Heisman Trophy for collegiate wrestling. And he announced last week that he will eventually make his way to mixed martial arts. Big news from the world of collegiate wrestling. So we will talk to him about that at 4 o'clock. At 3:45, we'll talk to Paul Craig, the aforementioned Paul Craig, about the split draw. Did he agree with the decision? Where he goes from here? At 3:25, we'll talk to James Krause, the aforementioned James Krause, about his big win. He's won six in a row if you exclude the tough fights, and it's been a great career turnaround for James Krause, the James Krause. So we'll talk to him about that. Yoel Romero will stop by at 3:05, talk about his efforts to get the Israel Adesanya fight and the back and forth between them. Corey Sandhagen is fighting Frankie Edgar on January 25th, we'll talk to him about that massive fight for him in Raleigh, North Carolina. Cesar Gracie, as you may know, the mentor and the longtime head coach and manager for the Diaz brothers, will stop by. It's been a while since I talked to him. Want to get his thoughts on Nick's interview last week and what he's been up to, and Nate's rise as well. How about Mick Foley, Mankind, Dude Love, Cactus Jack? He'll be on the show as well. He's in a new film called The Peanut Butter Falcon, which is now out on DVD. And yeah, we are wearing the same shirt. Thank you for that, Corporate Jake. It's on DVD, Blu-ray, digital. We have some, it's pretty much the exact same shirt. Jeez Louise, that's crazy. Anyway, he's a legend. I'm so excited to have him on, three-time WWE champion, just one of the greatest of all time. So that's going to be really a lot of fun. Ben Askren will stop by at 1:25. You don't want to miss that. But first, let us go to the Skype machine and say hello to our old friend. It's been a while since we talked to Cigano. He's been a very busy man as of late. There he is, Junior Dos Santos, kind enough to stop by at the top of the show. Junior, how are you, my friend? Bom dia.
Hey, Ariel. How are you, man? I'm doing great here.
Okay, we have a lot to talk about. So I understand you're still in that Dancing with the Stars show in Brazil, and I understand the last episode was last night. How did you do?
I'm sorry, say it again?
You're still on that Dancing with the Stars show in Brazil, right? The dancing show? And the last episode was last night, right?
Yeah, yeah. The last night was the last time I was dancing. And that was great, actually. You know, I felt really good. And the ones who got the lower rate right now, you know, are out of the show. So I'm lucky because, you know, we got some good numbers from them. You know, we are still in the competition.
Wow. Okay. So you did. How much longer is there in the competition?
Say it again.
How much longer is there in the competition?
The finals will be in December 22nd. So we still have a lot of time of dancing.
Do you have a background in dancing? Like when I saw you on camera, you seem like a natural. You seem like you're really good at it. Is this something that you did in your past?
Well, no, I don't have any backgrounds on dancing. You know, but like I told you already, you know, I learn everything very fast. You know, everything that people take some time to teach me how to do it, I can do it very well. You know, so that's what's happening here. My teacher, my dancing coach, she's a great girl, you know, and she's teaching me some good movements, and we are doing great on the show. So I'm very happy about that.
And have you been enjoying the experience?
I'm sorry.
Have you been enjoying the experience being on the show? Do you like it? Have you been enjoying it?
Oh my gosh, it's
you can't hear me.
It's a little, you know, the noise is a little strange, so I'm not.
Should we reconnect with them? Do you want us to call you back?
Yeah, maybe that would be good. Yeah.
Okay, we'll call you right back.
Okay.
Thanks. All right, we'll call Junior right back. He, of course, was in the news last week because he will be headlining that January 25th card on ESPN Plus against one Curtis Blades that will be in Raleigh, North Carolina. And so that will be the headliner, JDS versus Curtis Blades. And then the co-headliner will be Corey Sanhagen against Frankie Edgar. So two really great fights. And that's on the same night as Chris Cyborg's Bellator debut. So perhaps UFC is stacking the deck for that particular card. But what's so interesting about JDS is that, if you recall, he was supposed to fight in Moscow last weekend or 2 weekends ago against Alexander Volkov, and had to pull out of that fight because of that infection that he had in his leg. He was suffering from cellulitis. Here's some footage of him in the hospital. And despite all of that, he still remained in the dancing show. It's sort of like their version of Dancing with the Stars. And so it's, I was shocked that he was still in it, but apparently he was doing so well prior to the injury that, and even while he was training for the fight, that they were still in it afterwards, even though he was unable to compete. As you can see, he was in the hospital and it was pretty gruesome stuff. So apparently that show is a really big deal in Brazil, as it is here in America as well. And so I was really surprised that he was still in it. So he was unable to fight against Alexander Volkov last weekend, but now 2 months later, he is booked against Curtis Blades in a important fight in the heavyweight division. I believe we have him back. Junior, can you hear me now? How's this?
Thank you. And that is a little noise, but you know, maybe the connection is not that good, but I can hear you.
Okay. I was just wondering if you have been enjoying the experience of being on the show.
Yeah, I'm enjoying a lot, you know, everything what's happening in the show. Yeah, it's a new challenge for me, and a different thing that I never did before in my life. And I'm having a lot of a lot of fun doing this, because it brought something different to my routine, you know, daily routine. So I'm happy about it, and I'm even happier because we are getting good results.
Yes. And what do you win? If you win the show, what do you win?
Well, the biggest thing for me, it's every Sunday I'm on your television. Like here in Brazil, everybody's watching me. So, like Globo is the biggest network here, you know, in Brazil. So for me to be participating on this show is very, really important. But the winner of the competition will win a car, you know.
Wow.
So, they will give us a car. It's not a big deal, but to be in the show for me is the biggest deal, because I'm able to show myself. in a different way for everybody.
So like I said, while we were trying to reconnect with you, I was surprised that you were still in the show while you were dealing with the leg infection that, that you suffered. Could you tell us what happened with your leg?
Well, yeah, actually, I have to tell you, I'm a lucky guy. I was talking to my doctor, Maria Bogeia, and we were discussing about this. And she said, yeah, I'm a lucky guy. Well, actually, I'm lucky to be a healthy guy and a strong guy. Because at the beginning of the whole situation, the whole infection, I was able to feel good, to stay strong during I was in the hospital. And now before of the whole thing, the whole process, I'm recovering very, very fast. So she said, yeah, it's all about you, because you take care of yourself. And but I really believe, I'm a lucky guy, every way in my life. So I think that's why things are happening in a good way for me. I was sad because I had to pull out of the fight against Volkov.
Yeah.
I was very sad about that because I was willing to fight him, especially there in Russia, for the first time. But then I was kind of happy because I could keep myself on this dancing competition, and it was something else for me because, I don't like to stay without challenges. I need to have challenges in my life, and that's why I accept my next fight already. So things are going good. And what is in the past already. So we don't care about that anymore. We just learn from that and we become smarter and stronger and we move forward.
Could you tell us what happened with your leg? It was an infection. I think it was called cellulitis, right?
Yeah, it was a bacteria infection, a very bad one, And the doctor said if I wait a little bit more, like 1 day or 2 days more, maybe I could lose my leg.
Wow.
Or even die. That was a very bad thing. And that's why I say, I'm a lucky guy, because I was wondering, how fragile we are, because man, I was feeling great. Then I don't know how got in my leg and I was for 9 days in the hospital in a very bad situation. So it's kind of crazy, but like I said, thank God everything went good. And I'm here speaking to you again.
Did you have surgery?
I had, yes, I had actually in 1 week, I took general anesthesia, right?
Yeah,
general anesthesia 3 times.
Wow.
In 1 week.
Wow.
Yeah, to do the surgeries because they found the bacteria. So then they clean up that area. And they gave me the medicine, So then they found another part of my leg that was the same, like suffering the same thing. So they opened it again and they cleaned up all the mess. And I was in the medicine antibiotics.
Yeah.
For 22 days.
Wow.
So, but now I'm feeling great. I don't feel pain anymore. And as you can see, I can, dance pretty well. So I'm ready to move on, like I said.
How many surgeries did you have in total?
In total was 3.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Two of them to clean the whole thing, and the other one was to check if everything was right and to close the holes on my leg, Because it was open, it was getting drained all the time. So then the third one was to fix it all.
Do you know how it got infected?
I don't really know that. The doctor said this kind of bacteria is on us already, on our skin. And once she finds a good area to grow, a good situation to grow, that's what happens, you know. But I didn't feel anything. I was kicking the heavy bag on Friday. In a Friday, I was kicking the heavy bag on the gym, and I felt a little pain on my chin, and I said, better stop, right? So then on Saturday, I saw a little area that was kind of red on my leg, you know, and I didn't give too much attention. It's normal for us, you know, we are kicking and getting this this bruises all the time. So, but then on Sunday, I was my leg was getting very hot, very red, and very painful. So I thought to myself, man, there's something very bad here, you know. Let me call my doctor. So I called my doctor, and she said, yeah, go straight to the hospital because we need to check it out. It's probably it's a bacteria infection, and it was, you know.
Wow.
So it was like this, you know.
Wow.
Nothing happened to me. I didn't get cut or nothing. It just somehow it got in my leg and growth and all this thing happened.
But now you're 100%?
I still cannot kick.
Okay.
With that leg, the doctor doesn't want me to kick with that leg. But I'm feeling great. I tell him every day, you know, that he told me that I can train already, you know, do my physical conditioning or whatever I want to do, even jiu-jitsu. But better not use that leg to kick now, you know. So hold for a little bit more. But I'm feeling great, you know, and I'm happy because I already have a next challenge. Not just the dancing thing, but a fighting thing too,
yes.
You know. So yeah, this is very important to me because it brings me motivation. It brings me happiness to my life, you know, to have challenge to keep my life going on.
Yes, so that's January 25th against Curtis Blaydes, main event in North Carolina. By the way, in your great UFC career, you have never fought in Brazil, in your home country, right? Why?
Yeah.
That's surprising to me. How come? You're such a big star in Brazil and one of the most famous Brazilian fighters, yet you've never, like, this Moscow card was a week before the Brazilian card. Why weren't you booked on the Brazilian card? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. But I don't really understand why, you know, that was happening. And I don't really, and I have to tell you, you know, I want to fight. I never fought here in Brazil after I'm in the UFC. But I have to tell you that I don't really care where I'm going to be fighting. I know the people that support me, even especially the Brazilians, they will be watching the fights, my fight, and they will be rooting for me, you know. So anywhere I fight, I feel good because I have their support. I have actually not just Brazilians, but people all over the world, you know, they are there sending their message for me, sending their good energy, you know, and that's the most important thing for me. But of course, at some point, you know, I'm going to be fighting here in Brazil. It was kind of, I was thinking about that, you know, they put me to fight in Russia like a week before the show here in Brazil. They could do differently, you know, but I think it was a very important show for Russia, and that made me feel good because they trust me
that
I can make big shows, you know, all over the world, you know, anywhere, Australia, anywhere I go, I can, you know, have people watching us and having fun, having good times watching us, you know, beat each other.
and you will always be linked with Cain Velasquez. Have you seen him do the wrestling now? And are you surprised that he has retired from MMA?
Yeah, kind of surprised, you know. Actually, I don't really try to understand that, you know. But I wish luck for him, you know. It's a different career. It's kind of, you know, I don't really understand how this this pro wrestling thing work, but it's interesting, you know. People, I know that they have a lot of fans, and I know it's fake, you know. So, but I wish luck for him, you know. I wish he can do a good career over there, and maybe we can meet each other over there at some point when I retire from, when I get old enough
yeah.
to retire from MMA, I can move up to that. To the WWE thing too, you know, this pro wrestling thing, and having a wrestling match against Cain Velasquez. That it doesn't sound very good right now, but maybe in the future.
Okay. And by the way, have you been impressed with Curtis Blaydes? He's looked very good as of late.
Well, I think he's a tough guy. He's well rounded, right? He's a dangerous fighter. You know, and but I already told you once, actually more than once, and I have to tell you again, you know, I don't really care about who's my opponent, who's in front of me. I'm coming to give my the best of myself, you know, to get the win, you know. And my last fight was a bad result for me, and this is the most dangerous division, you know. Heavyweight division is crazy, man. Once you got punched in the face, you go down. It's crazy. But I'm looking forward for this fight. You know, I know Curtis Blaydes is coming from some good fights. You know, and I'll be ready to beat him.
Okay. And my last question for you is: what did you think of Volkov's performance against Greg Hardy?
I think the luckiest guy in this whole situation is Volkov. Because if I was there, man, he wouldn't be that happy, you know. I know he was happy because, you know, he won the fight there in Russia, you know, very important for him. But I think he's the luckiest guy here because if I was there fighting him, you wouldn't get that result, you know.
All right. Junior, I wish you the best. Thank you, as always, for doing this. I'm so happy to hear that you're okay, that your leg is okay, and good luck not only in training for this upcoming fight, but in the dancing competition as well. You're doing a great job over there. You're representing the MMA community very well, so keep it up, my friend. Thank you, as always.
Thank you very much, Raul. It's always good to talk with you.
Always.
See you soon.
Thank you. There he is, the former UFC heavyweight champion, the man they call Sagano. If you have not seen any of that footage of him dancing, you can see it on YouTube, other websites. He's amazing at it. Of course, he has that big smile. He's always sporting that big smile, but he's very light on his feet. He does a great job, and it's really like our version of Dancing with the Stars, but it's amazing that he's still involved in it after going through that ordeal with his leg, and now already has his next fight booked. So that's January 25th in Raleigh, North Carolina. Is it Raleigh or Raleigh? Is it Raleigh or Raleigh?
Raleigh.
It's Raleigh. I think that's the Canadian in me. So it's Raleigh, North Carolina. That's January 25th, and the co-main, like I said, is Corey Sandhagen versus Frankie Edgar. All right, let's move along now to our next guest. We just spoke to him a couple weeks ago after the Damian Maia fight, but he is back making his 10th appearance in 2019. Would you believe it? Ben Askren, 10 times in 2019. There he is, the funky one himself. Did you know that you have been on this program, Ben, 10 times in 2019? I believe that's some kind of record.
I thought it was actually more than that, but yeah, I've made mention of me. Probably should be a co-host for you at this point.
Yeah, well, every time you come on, you boost our rating, so I'm very thankful. But unlike those other 9 times, each and every time I've reached out to you, I bothered you, you know, about coming on, about gracing us with your presence. This particular time, the 10th time, truth be told, I hope you don't mind that I'm breaking down the fourth wall.
Fair.
You reached out to me this time.
I gave you a call, yeah.
You gave me a call last week, and you said that you wanted to share some news with the world. Yeah. You had something that you wanted to get off your chest. So without further ado, the floor is yours. What do you want to say?
Yeah. Well, I think it's fairly obvious what I'm going to say. I'm retiring from the sport of mixed martial arts, and frankly, I'm retiring from everything. You know, I was thinking about it when we had last talked, obviously something I was considering, but I'd been having hip problems, and I finally had the discussion with my doctor, and I actually got the MRI before my last fight, and I need a hip replacement. So, man, that's it for me. I've been thinking about this for a week and kind of what I was going to say, and lately, I've just been filled with gratitude for how great of a career I've been able to have, even though, obviously, in the end, it did not turn out to go my way.
So you are officially done. You will never fight again.
Yeah, unless there's some type of advances in technology. But, you know, so just to break this down, when I came back, I had been having hip issues for probably, I don't know, 3 to 5 years-ish, somewhere in there. When I came back and started training in December, it got really bad. I visited my doctors in Columbia, who I kept in touch with. That was where I went to college. I went down there. I got an x-ray, and I got a PRP shot. The PRP shot helped significantly with the pain, but not with the mobility at all. They saw the x-rays, and they said, yeah, you're all jacked up, but, you know, you could probably just keep going, and whenever you're done, we'll fix it. So in about August, it had gotten pretty bad again, and I went down there, got another PRP shot, and that didn't really help all that much. So I consulted with that doctor, and he said, hey, you know, why don't you get the MRI before your fight? I'll look at it. When you're done with your fight, we'll scope your hip, and that'll give you a couple years worth of relief. And you'll probably need to get the hip replaced at some point. And then, you know, I got the MRI done, and he didn't call me back. He didn't get back to me. I thought that's kind of strange. So sure enough, after my fight, I talked to him, and he said, hey, you need a hip replacement. And then I've consulted with – you know, he doesn't do that specific procedure. I've talked to 3 or 4 doctors, and, you know, all of them are pretty much – yeah, once you do that, you're pretty much done.
Wow. And so how does this, like, actually saying it to the world, verbalizing it, what is going on in your mind right now? How are you feeling about this?
I mean, right now, I'm not really feeling too much. I got really emotional the other day because I just started thinking about all the great experiences I've had and, man, how lucky I have been to have the amount of success that I have. I mean, from everywhere, right? From high school state titles to junior national titles to 29 world teams to – everything I did in college, whether it's national titles or Hodge trophies to the Olympic team to a Bellator title to a ONE title to, you know, even this UFC thing, man, I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to go see if I could do it, because if I never got that opportunity, I think I would have – that would have eaten at me as I got older.
And so now that you have to – do you know when you have to have that surgery?
I don't think – it's not like imminent, right? It's just okay. And honestly, I haven't really trained. All I've done is like 3 yoga classes in the last two plus weeks. And, you know, I'm not feeling as bad as I was. It's just, you know, when you're training twice a day on something that probably shouldn't be trained on, there's a lot of issues there. And then there is a significant loss of mobility. I mean, I just can't, my leg just doesn't move certain ways, and that it used to anymore. And so, I don't know. I'm talking to a doctor from New York right now. I'm talking to a doctor from Cleveland right now. My main practitioner in Missouri, he doesn't do the specific type of surgery that I'm going to get. So he's kind of like referring me to other people.
How will this affect? Because, of course, you've told us time and again that you're very involved with the wrestling camps, the youth camps, all that stuff, coaching. How will this affect your ability to be a coach?
You know, they seem to think that you can do stuff on it, right? You can live a normal life, but, you know, competing would be over and above. And I kind of even push back on that a little bit. I'm like, well, if, you know, I'm not saying I have to. I'm, you know, and even without this hip thing, if there was no hip thing, man, I would probably not be retiring, but I wouldn't be too far off. And I said, listen, I already retired once. I retired in November of 2017. And to that point, I had never gotten the ability to fight the top guys. And so when I was offered that opportunity in November of 2018, obviously I jumped at the opportunity. But I was already in retirement. I was already happy doing what I'm doing. And so you can live a normal life from what it appears. Obviously, I always envisioned myself as I got older still doing grappling competitions or wrestling matches just for the fun to stay in shape because I enjoy competing. And now, you know, obviously everyone I've talked to is kind of recommended against that, which is unfortunate.
So would it be fair to say if this wasn't an issue that you had to deal with, that you would fight at least one more time?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, I do have a lot of other things I'm really, really excited to go on and do in my life, which, yeah, I've probably outlined those in the previous, times I've been on here. But yeah, I think I would, you know, but now when I think back, well, if I didn't have to deal with this hip shit, man, training would be a whole lot easier. I wouldn't have to worry about it. I wouldn't be in pain on a regular basis. And maybe my whole experience would be totally different. Hey, wait, the other thing, you know what? I want to say this right away, Ariel. I don't And obviously I've known these hip issues for a while, and I've never brought them up for a reason, because I don't want people to think that I'm using this as a reason why I lost. I lost because I wasn't good enough. Plain and simple. My opponents beat me. They were better than me. And I want that to be just said out there. Obviously, these hip issues for me are totally separate. I lost because I wasn't good enough. And I want to put that out there that I these obviously seem as though they're excuses, but I don't want them to be viewed in that light.
I don't view it that way because it's happening weeks later, right? If it was happening, yeah, you know, at the post-fight press conference, then maybe people would view it that way, but these are real things that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
For you to say I wasn't good enough though, because you've told us time and again that the reason why you wanted to come to the UFC was to prove that you're the best. Is that a hard thing to say?
Yes and no. I mean, just because I wasn't good enough in 2019 doesn't take away from any of my previous things that I've accomplished. So obviously I have all those things to sit back and look on. And I think that the competition is, you're either good enough or you're not, right? And that's kind of one of the things I love so much about it, is there's no gray area. Either you win or you lose, and you have a definite answer. And listen, I've achieved just about everything you can in sport, but when it came to achieving the two biggest things, the Olympic gold medal and then to prove I'm the best fighter in the world, I came up a little bit short. Is that hard? Sure. Do I learn? Have I learned great lessons from that I'm going to apply to the rest of my life? Yes, I am. And so, yeah, a little bit of it sucks, but man, that's part of life.
Do you regret the fact that you didn't go to the UFC earlier in your career? That you weren't able to go to the UFC? You weren't given that opportunity.
Yeah. It wasn't my choice.
Right.
I was never offered that opportunity. And you know, I obviously that was an obvious question that you'd ask. So I thought about it, and man, I guess it's a yes and no. If I go right there in 2013, obviously I'm younger and that's going to be much better for me. But then at the same time, it's like, man, I loved my time at ONE Championship. I love beating those guys. I have a great relationship with many people in the organization, including, Chacho Sidiodong still. And then, you know, that made my arrival in the UFC all that much bigger. And, you know, I didn't get my opportunity when I wanted to, but I got my opportunity. In life, you can't whine and bitch about not getting the perfect opportunity. All you need is opportunity, and I got it. And frankly, I was right. July 6th, I was exactly where I wanted to be. I won my first fight. I had got the fight that I wanted against Jorge Masvidal, which I felt like was, of all the fights I could get, probably the easiest path to the title. If I won that fight, I'd put myself in a position where I was going to get the title shot at Madison Square Garden against Marty Usman. And listen, I came up short. Sometimes you come up short. That's life. Tough shit.
And by the way, is it the right or the left hip?
It's my left hip.
Okay. And do you recall the first time you started to feel pain there? Like, how long has this been actually bothering you for?
Well, so... yeah, so I've had like low back and hip muscular pain for as long as I can remember. We're talking 6, 7, 8, 9 years. I mean, a really long time. And so now that I'm tying that back into, a lot of that is tied into my lack of hip mobility. So obviously it's probably it's probably been an issue before I even realized it's an issue. And the first really significant time I can remember, because now I can only sleep one way. I can only sleep one way. So I remember, but when it was coming on, I don't know why I remember so clearly, but the week of my retirement fight against Shinya Aoki, I had slept in a funny position and I got up and I could barely walk. And it was like, and I was just telling one of my people that was with me about that. And it was kind of, didn't really think much of it at the time. And then now since then, right, obviously it's continued to get worse and worse and worse.
Wow. Okay. So that, I mean, we're talking multiple years. Now, did you ever feel like, especially in the fights after that, the UFC fights, did you feel like in this Maya fight, did you feel like it hindered you at all? And again, I'm not trying to lead you down the path.
No, I didn't.
Okay. It didn't.
I did not.
All right. Yeah. So what led you to go check it out now to finally get this, you know?
Well, I checked it out. I got the MRI on October 10th or something.
Okay.
Prior to my fight. And I first visited my doctor in January. When I came back and started training, I was having a lot of issues, and I visited them in January, and they got the x-ray, and they said, yeah, it's bad. Let's do this PRP shot. Let's see how that helps. Let's see if we can get through it. And then, remember, it got worse. So, yeah. You know, then the idea was we get an MRI, and then we scope it, and I guess that can provide some relief and make you better. And then after my fight, you know, we talked. And he said, man, scoping is not going to help. That's probably actually going to speed up the deterioration. and make it worse because it's so bad. So yeah, so I he said you need full hip replacement. That's well, I'm sorry, it's not a full hip replacement. It's called what it's called is a Birmingham hip. That's the specific name. It's a newer. It's a newer procedure. It's supposed to be less invasive than the full hip replacement. So yeah, but it's very specific. There's only a few people that do it.
Are there other notable wrestlers who have gone through this? Have you reached out to any of them? Have you talked to any of them?
Man, hip replacements happen a lot in wrestlers. And so growing up, you know, coming through the ranks, like what I did in wrestling, the scrambling style, it's like, dude, shit, I'm going to need a hip replacement at some point. Hopefully it's later than earlier. You know, I was hoping maybe I could make it till 50 or something before it happened, but I always assumed it was going to happen. So yes, it is fairly common in wrestlers. You see quite a few people get it.
What do you think now will be your legacy? Does it bother you that you end on the two losses like that? Do you get worried about the fact that you will be defined by the Masvidal fight? Has this been something that you've even thought about? I know this is all very fresh, but for the longest time, you were like the dominant guy, and even at times labeled as, you know, boring or not that exciting.
Yeah.
And then
I never thought about legacy ever. Legacy is worthless to think about. What's the point, right? People are going to think of you what they think of you, and I'm sure, right? 50% of Twitter will say Ben sucked. He always sucked, and another 50% will say, oh, he was good, but Dana didn't sign him until he was 35, and that's why he didn't win, right? And then they'll just argue about that. And the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
Does it bother you that you end on two losses after going undefeated for so long?
It's not ideal, but again, what am I going to do? What am I going to do about it? I have no recourse at this point, right? Would I have liked to beat Damian Maia? Yeah, duh. Would I have liked to beat George? Duh, right? But at this point, man, those have already happened. I can't go back. Sucks.
But do you feel like this is the kind of thing that when you're 70 that will really, you know, eat at you inside, or are you proud of what you've done in your MMA career?
How many times are you going to ask the same question?
Well, I'm just wondering. I mean,
yeah, I've already said, I said I think it was Saturday, I was overcome with a sense of gratitude for everything I've been able to accomplish. I mean, when I'm a little kid looking up, so never thought, dude, I'm going to be a multiple-time NCAA champion, multiple-time Hodge winner, Olympian, Bellator champion, one champion. I mean, like, dude, those things are those are the things that little kids' dreams are made of, and I accomplished all of them. I came up short twice. I came up short at the Olympics. I came up short when I came to the UFC. It sucks, but that's life.
At what point in your career, if you can even pinpoint it, at what point were you the happiest? Where you felt like, all right, I was the best fighter in the world. I wasn't maybe fighting in the UFC.
Well, that's different. That's right. The best and being the best and being the happiest. I was similar level happy the whole time. At no point did my happiness level change. I enjoy the journey. I enjoy what I do. If I didn't enjoy it, I would have never came back. And I would have quit whenever I stopped enjoying it. Obviously, like I said, I did never loved it as much as I loved wrestling, but I did enjoy it thoroughly. I think the Lima fight was kind of where I started figuring everything out. I mean, at that point in my career, I believe that was, 2011? I'm 2 years into my fighting career. 2012, okay. 3 years into my fighting career. I feel like that was one of the times where I really felt like I started figuring it out. And then really from there, I felt great. You know, I kind of just steamrolled everybody after that.
The line that I haven't forgotten, that you just said it a couple of weeks ago, but I thought it was a very revealing line. You never really liked fighting, right? You didn't really enjoy the idea of punching people in the face. This wasn't something that you dreamt of doing. Yeah. But yet to have such a great career, to have such longevity and not like it, to me, I think it's something that people can't really wrap their head around. How could you?
Well, I hope I'm not misquoting myself.
Okay.
No, I don't enjoy really hurting people. I don't enjoy that part of it. Obviously, that's part of it. I think I said I don't enjoy it as much as I enjoy wrestling. But on a day-to-day basis, and this is an attraction for most males, like, most guys go to work from 9 to 5, and then they're going to go pay money to a gym to do stuff that I get paid to do for a living, right? Go train and be with other guys my age. And, yeah, so, I mean, I feel like I thoroughly enjoyed the training. I didn't have the same level of enjoyment as wrestling, but that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it. So I don't think I enjoyed trying to hurt people, although that was part of the deal.
So in a weird way, did you maybe like were you surprised by how well you did in MMA because of those feelings of not wanting to hurt people?
No, not really. I was good at it. I mean, the best fight is the Koreshkov fight where I felt so guilty after like the first round and a half. I felt so guilty. I mean, and eventually in the fourth round, I'm like, dude, like how many more times are you gonna make me punch this guy? This is terrible. This guy he's done. Like, just stop it.
Yeah.
And you know, I had to say that to the ref like two or three times before the ref actually stopped it. But it was kind of ridiculous that I had to keep punching him. I didn't really want to keep punching him, right? But then obviously if I don't punch him, he's going to try to punch me, and that's not so good either, right? So I treated it as a sport. I enjoyed the sporting aspect of it, but actually trying to hurt somebody, I didn't love that.
You know, it's interesting because you did retire, as you mentioned, back in 2017. But if you're being honest, did you really think that you were done then?
I thought it was probably 50-50.
50-50. This time's completely different, right?
Yeah, I'm done. I got to go get a hip replacement. What am I going to do about it?
Yeah. So is this, in a weird way, even though you have to get the hip replacement, is it easier because you at least got the UFC chance? The last time you were almost like putting your hands up and saying like, look, I've done all that I can. I'm not going to get this chance. Like, I'm out of here. But this time you at least got to try and see how you did over there.
Yes.
So I'm wondering which one's easier. It sounds like maybe this one's easier because at least there's no doubt.
I was in a really good place. I was happy with how things went. And again, no fault of my own, I didn't get the shot, right? It was just, I just didn't get the shot. I wasn't offered the opportunity. And so when I retired, I thought there was a 50-50 chance that I would be coming back. Obviously, it wasn't on me. There was other hurdles that had to be cleared for me to get there, right? I mean, one championship would have to release me. Then the UFC would have to sign me. You know, the chances of both those things probably weren't that great in my mind. Maybe there was something where they do a co-promote with Bellator. I thought maybe there was some other options. Or maybe someone really, really high level comes to one championship and I could do the fight there, right? So I thought there were some other options. But, you know, obviously, like I said, I've said this 100 times, I never envisioned a trade like that. That
right.
Really was never part of my thinking. It never happened. It hasn't happened since. Yeah, I do. I was truly 50-50. I was truly at peace where I was at in 2017. And I would say, so this feels similarly.
We talked about this 2 weeks ago after the Maya fight, and now it's even crazier. Like the past 12 months in your life from the trade, entering the UFC, this is now ending with a retirement almost exactly 12 months later, like November to November when you showed up at MSG. Yeah. This is like, This is a book. Like, just these 12 months alone is a book, right? I would imagine. Exhausting.
Under my ideal circumstances, if I could have, like, written the story, I would have beat Robbie, beat George, fought in Madison Square Garden, and that would have been it, right?
Mm.
I would have won the belt and retired as the best in the world. That would have been, like, that's, like, my ideal story. And so, obviously, didn't turn out ideal. That's the way life works sometimes. But yeah, I never thought it would. I knew I wouldn't be back forever. Like, I knew I wouldn't be back for 3 years of fighting. That just wasn't in me. I have so many other things I want to do. Like I said, that was my ideal path. It was a year. When I lose to George, I'm like, okay, maybe it's going to take a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and then I'll have the final answer. But yeah, that was it.
Can I give you a bit of a hot take? I think the UFC run, despite going 1-2, was actually one of the best things to happen in your career because of the fun that you had out of the cage, how fun the fights were, action-packed. It really shed the light. Like, if you were a new fan or just a UFC fan, the idea that Ben Askren was boring or considered boring or labeled as a boring fighter in the one Bellator days is ludicrous, right? Yeah. So at the very least, it may have just shed that label. I know it didn't go the way you wanted it to go, but at least you don't walk away with that label. You know what I mean?
I never cared about other people labeling me
sure.
in the first place. the other thing I think about, and I'm very at peace with the way my path went, and like I said, man, one championship, I loved it, and I really like those people a lot. But damn, how much fun would this have been in 2013?
Yeah,
I mean, we would have had a great time,
right?
Yeah. So I think about how that could have went too, but yeah, that probably would have been a lot more fun for the UFC. They would have made some more money because I think I was able to draw quite a few fans through all of my fights and make a lot of excitement happen.
Have you informed the UFC of this decision?
I might text them after this. I told you I'll let you have the scoop. I'll let you have the scoop. I did call. So I called them to see if their insurance would pay for a hip replacement. and they say only if it actually happens in a fight. And it didn't happen in a fight. Okay, cool. I have my own insurance. We could do that. I figured I'd just check. So I guess ipso facto, in a way, I have kind of told them. I don't know if I can't remember who that was I talked to. I don't know if she passed word on to anyone else, but I will send them both, Hunter and Dana, a message after I get off this show with you. And then that'll be it.
What do you think that chat with Dana is going to be like?
I wasn't planning on calling him. We don't have that type of relationship. I don't think we've ever talked on the phone. I will tell him I appreciate the opportunity because one way or another, whatever he had against me previously, he got over it. We made this happen. I got the opportunity that I wanted, and that's that.
Do you think you will still be involved in MMA in some capacity moving forward? Like, I think you could be a great commentator in addition to being a coach. So, like, are these things that interest you?
I signed a deal actually with a management firm to they're going to go see if people want me to be a broadcaster because I've been harassed about it constantly.
Okay.
In the last 3 weeks or so. I'm not even sure that's what I want to do. I have my own podcast with wrestling and other stuff I do. I told them if it allowed me to have a high deal of flexibility and I wasn't busy all the time with it, I would enjoy. Obviously, I'd enjoy doing it sometimes, but is it the best use of my time? Is it the thing I want to do the most? I'm not so sure about that. So there's that. I'm currently coaching Macy Barber, and that's like the only person I coach. I actually didn't really want to be an MMA coach, and it just happened. And so, yeah, I mean, I'll probably be around wrestling a lot more than I'll be around MMA, but I'll probably be around MMA a little bit.
So Rufus Sport, you won't be coaching there?
No, I haven't coached at Duke since 2016.
Even with Tyron and all that?
He would come up by me.
Oh, okay. So, but you won't do any of that?
I mean, yeah, if Tyron asked for help, sure, I would be willing to help him if I can. Other people, it's just, I mean, they have a really good situation, Dukes. There's a lot of great training partners. And so I'm out here, by myself. I don't foresee that happening.
Okay. Did you have a falling out with Duke?
No, we did kind of many years back, but we've since patched that up and we're good to go.
Okay. So this isn't something that you're actively looking, like you have the thing with Macy, you're happy with that, but it's not like you're going to create a fight team, a funky fight team or anything like that.
At this point in my life, I have no desire to do that. I told you on the last show that Max and I are, my Max is my brother. We're opening gyms 4 and 5 next year in 2020. That couldn't be going better. I mean, we just love what we do. It's going really well. I just bought another building. And I got a lot of other stuff going on in my life. So, yeah, I don't envision. Who knows? I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying that's not something I'm envisioning right now.
In addition to, like, forget about training fighters, I feel like you can teach a lot of fighters about marketing themselves, about how to, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is where you can shine.
But funny enough, okay, so me and your nemesis just did our most recent podcast, which will go up later today, is Top 10 MMA Personalities.
Okay. Where do I fall into that? Top 5?
No, it's current active fighters only.
Oh, okay.
Current active. And yes, I watched some of these guys, and a lot of them are missing the boat, and a lot of them, they fail to lack the perception of how other people see them. And you know the guy who I think they could read that is just like, he's brilliant, and talking about this is a guy named Scott Adams. Mm. You know who that is?
Yeah. You mean from the old WC days?
No, Scott Adams, he was the Dilbert comic strip guy, and he's written a few books since then. Oh, he's brilliant. You should read. He's got... Win Bigley in his last book is Loser Think. I mean, he's a really brilliant guy. It's fascinating. So he talks a lot about persuasion, and he's very, very, very interesting to read. So So who would you think the top five MMA personalities are?
Oh, my.
Right now, current active fighters only. Let's see how close you get to it. So here's how we did it, Errol. I did my list. He did his list independently. We totaled them up, you know, 20 down to 1 point for 20 for first, 1 point for 20th. Then we added them together, and then we put a combined list up.
Okay.
Let's see what you got.
Top five. We're doing one through five. Now, you know, I know you like take shots at him, but do you consider Connor an active fighter?
An active fighter.
Yeah. Okay. So Connor.
Yep. He was number one on both of our lists.
Okay. There you go. Personality. I think Khabib should. Khabib?
Dumping you, Ariel. I think he was number three. I'll bring it up. I think he's number three on our list.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
Who else you got?
Henry Cejudo.
He was high on my list. He didn't make Brian's list. It was surprising.
Not top five? He's done a great job this year.
I think I had him ranked at six or seven.
Oh, really? I'm surprised. Yeah. Colby?
No, didn't make top ten.
What?
You're missing some obvious. You're missing some obvious.
Wait. I'm working. Jeez. Oh, Adesanya.
Adesanya was number four. Yes.
Number four.
Yeah, I can't believe you're missing. You're missing number two. So
Bones.
Connor, he's number eight on our list.
Okay.
How are you missing number two? This is so obvious.
Number two. Male.
Who?
No, is it a male? Male or female?
It is a male. We only have one female on our top 10, and it was Joanna, Holly, Valentina, and Chris Cyborg. They were all past number 10, but they all got some points.
Okay, so I said Connor, Bones.
You got those. So you got Connor, you got Khabib, Cormier? You got Adesanya, you got Bones. Cormier is number five.
Okay, okay.
You got one, three, four, five.
Not Colby.
You're missing two, six.
Oh, Masvidal. Nate. Masvidal, Nate.
Masvidal six. Nate's number two.
Masvidal six.
Tony.
Wait. Now give me the top five. Now.
Okay. Connor, Nate, Khabib, Adesanya, Cormier, George.
I'm shocked. Colby didn't make the top 10. Now you're just biased. Now it's because you don't like him.
I can't stand his personality. Yeah. Yeah. I did have a vote.
Yeah, but you can't.
I have to vote. Half the votes, matter of fact. I'm surprised Brian loves his gimmick. I'm surprised Brian didn't vote for him on a higher level.
We've given Brian way too much attention on this particular segment right here. I mean, you've name dropped him like four times. No, I love Brian.
Well, it was our list. Yeah, you know, hey, listen, let me ask you this.
Yeah, sure. Were you turning the tables on me here?
I get to interview you.
Okay.
What I thought was interesting, and I didn't think about it when I put together this list, and Brian and I started talking about it as we put it together. It's funny how, because I brought up with Anderson Silva how he was number nine on our list. How Chael
Anderson Silva,
of,
get out of here. Active?
He was like number four on Brian's list. Five or something.
That's ridiculous.
So anyways, I had him lower. So how Chael made Anderson more likable because being the you know, heel to him essentially.
Yep.
But if you look at the top of the list, there's so much interplay between the guys, right? I mean, and so oftentimes it's when guys fight each other, like Cormier, Jones are both in there. Connor, Nate, Khabib, obviously those are the top three, and there's a whole bunch of interplay between all of them.
Yeah.
Do you think certain person's personalities make other people's personalities more pronounced?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look at what happened with Colby and Kamaru in Madison Square Garden. Kamaru's never been cheered that much, right? I mean, he actually, I think, owes Colby a huge debt of gratitude because I couldn't help but think of Tyron in that moment. I feel like Tyron would have relished being in that moment because everyone dislikes Colby so much that they cheered Kamaru. By the way, what did you make of him taking off his shirt for the, because that's not really a babyface move, right? It's not a babyface move
I
to take off
his
shirt.
That was terrible. I mean, what I said about the situation was, and you are right. Everyone hates Colby, and Colby's doing that. So he is, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe I should have put Colby higher on my list.
Come on.
I'll give you that. Maybe you're right. Okay, but Colby is actively trying to be unlikable.
Mm.
And Marty can't figure out how to get out of his own GD way and be likable. He just can't figure it out. It's like, dude, like it would be so easy to play the good guy to this bad guy. And you can't get out of your own way and make yourself likable. It's amazing to me. He needs to read Scott Adam.
The taking off the shirt is such a heel move in that moment.
Yes.
By the way,
yes, he needs to go. He needs to go read Scott Adams and figure out how to be persuasive.
Okay. I need to read that too. By the way, like I said, you've been on the show 10 times this year, not 10 times in the history of the show, lest we forget the time way back in the day when you threatened to beat me up and, you know.
I did not threaten to beat you up.
Yeah. Yeah. You said you were going to.
That is a lie.
But we put together actually a little thing for you, a little sort of tribute to your appearances this year on the program.
Wow.
So, I wanted to play it for you and then maybe get your reaction on the back end. How about that?
Oh my gosh. Wait, hold on.
What?
What is that right next to your computer on the left side? That is unacceptable. Unaerial. Unacceptable. Get rid of it.
All right. Sorry. This was given to me from MMA Bobblehead.
Put it behind the coffee cup or something.
Okay. Here it is. You can't see it anymore, right?
All right. Great. Thank
you. Here's Fedor. Okay. Here's a trip down memory lane with Ben Askren. He is one of the more popular and polarizing figures in the sport today, Ben Askren.
Errol, I feel like I've been on here so many times, I'm about to become your damn co-host or something. Chael is getting older, so maybe he's going to retire from this job as well.
Ariel and the Funky One.
I said, but wouldn't this be a lot more fun if we just pretended like we didn't like each other? Will you go show him how good a ratings Vince and Stone Cold did?
Yes, this is like the second coming. Now, what's going on with you and Conor McGregor? It seems like you're poking him a lot these days.
I do on social media. I poke people.
I'm not letting you too deep into my business, Ariel.
What? Well, why is that? Is that personal?
You always try to pry too much.
So you dodged the Lawler rematch bullet.
I can't believe you would make a damn accusation like that. I might as well come up to New York and slap you. Your nose is going to be hard to miss when I swing.
You were probably like the first fighter to ever really like threaten to beat me up.
I didn't threaten to beat you up.
Yes, you said come.
No, that's not what I said. Ariel's mad that I was being an a-hole.
I'm not.
And eating food on his show.
This lasted a long time between us.
I remember laughing because you banned me from your show. Try keeping me out, Ariel.
Would Masvidal pick you?
Pick me? Are you on drugs, Ariel?
Right. Ben says, okay, let's fight.
Right.
George says, I'm making excuses. I don't really want to fight you.
I got way more followers than him and I'm way higher paid than him.
His whole vocabulary consists of four-letter words.
I'm going to start calling him Flapjack because he's stooping to doing hype videos in IHOP parking lot.
Think you have a win in the UFC. Who are you fooling? You can fool the crowd, but you can't fool me, playboy.
My IQ points dropped about 7 points.
Because when I seen you in the hotel, what did you do? You ran away like a little when I tried to talk to you.
I think they purposely put me in a different hotel down the street because they knew I was going to instigate trouble. So he comes up the stairs. I say, hey, George is here. And then he gets, like, pissed. Like, it doesn't take anything to piss these guys off.
I lost to George Masvidal. This freaking sucks. What am I going to do about it? Cry? Ask for a rematch? I don't deserve a rematch. I got knocked out in 5 seconds. I don't like George at all, but that was a damn good flying knee. I got a great afternoon planned. And you just try to rub my face in the dirt just over and over again. I thought that we were friends, but now I'm starting to see. I think this is the backstab.
Did you enjoy that?
That was good. Wow. We had a lot of fun the last year.
We did, yes.
Hey, if Chael has a heart attack or something, maybe we could do a show together.
No, that was really cool, and I appreciate the team for putting that together. You've always been great. You've always been gracious with your time. We will miss you, Ben. We will really miss you. But I feel like you're going to be around. I feel like you're not going too
far. I'm
going
to be around.
Yeah.
You guys haven't seen the last of me. I might not be fighting. I may not be actively using my body for competition. But I got a lot of world to change. So we'll see what happens in the next 10, 20, 30 years.
By the way, later in the program, we're going to have another – I don't know if this has ever happened in the history of an MMA show. Two Danny Hodge winners on the same program. Bo Nickel, what do you think of his prospects?
He's going to be good.
Yeah?
He's going to be very good, I would assume. The one thing – and listen, I told him this straight to his face. I don't like – he's starting a gym in State College, Pennsylvania, because that's comfortable for him.
Mm.
That's where he goes to college. That's where he likes everyone. Man, unless he can somehow get the funds to get really good coaches and really good training partners there, I think that's kind of a mistake. I think he should probably go to one of the bigger gyms somewhere, at least for a few years till he can establish himself and then maybe move back to where he wants to move to. And I told him that. So I think he's going to be – I mean, even if he doesn't put himself in a great situation, I think he's going to be pretty outstanding.
And what was his response when you told him that?
I think he just smiled. You know, he's young. He's going to do whatever the hell he wants to do. That's part of the reason why he's so great.
Are you guys close?
I wouldn't say close. I actually tried to get him to come train with me for this Maya fight because I knew he was interested. But he was training for the U23 World Championships, and he was – I think he was gearing up for that. He actually won the U23 World Championship. I don't recall the exact date of that, but it was fairly recently.
Okay. It's just amazing. You know, here we are, you know, you called me last week and you gave me this news and your phone, you know, like your name showed up on my phone. And I was like, wow, Ben Askren's calling me. Cause usually we have more of a texting relationship, right?
Yeah.
But when you called me, I was like, okay, something serious is happening here. And to think of how far we've come, right? From like, you know, you threatening to beat me up and the banning from the show to now you coming to me to break the news. It's a huge honor. I'm really happy with the way this gives me hope for everyone who may be fighting. You know, look at us. Look at this pairing right here, you know? Not that I remember Pat Miletich jumped in. You remember that? Pat Miletich got involved and, you know, told me to.
I don't remember that.
Oh, you don't remember? See, of course, you've erased all of this from your memory, but no, it's really great. And I appreciate you doing this. And I want to congratulate you on an amazing career, an amazing run. It was a lot of fun to watch you, to cover you, to always interview you. You were always so, you know, kind with your time as far as the media is concerned. And this past year in particular, I know there were a lot of downs, but like the whirlwind that this year was just unlike any year that we've seen in MMA, like from Madison Square Garden showing up wearing flip-flops to the Lawler fight to then the build-up to the Masvidal fight and then this last fight against Maya. Kudos to you, my man. So I hope that you walk away. I hope you walk into the sunset with your head held high because I think you have nothing to be ashamed of.
You got it, Ariel. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Okay, that's it. I thought we were going to have a nice little moment there. You've had enough of me.
We had a moment.
Okay.
We had a moment. I'll see you again. See you again not too long.
All right. There he is. Ben Askren officially announcing his retirement from mixed martial arts. He has to have hip surgery. And that's it. He is done. 30. How old is he? 35? 35 years young. July 18th, 1984. He walks away with a 19-2-1 record. Last two fights in the UFC against, of course, Damian Maia and Jorge Masvidal didn't go his way. Prior to that, he was undefeated from his debut in 2009 till the Robbie Lawler fight back in March. And it was a great run. And remember, for the longest time, there was talk that, you know, he wasn't the most exciting fighter, that he was not, you know, a fan-friendly fight. His style wasn't fan-friendly. But over the years, I think he changed a lot of that. And if you look at his last few fights, the victories, forget about the last two losses, the victories, submission, victory over Robbie Lawler, TKO win over Shinya Aoki, TKO, submission. His last four victories were all finishes. It was during the Bellator run in the middle there that there were a lot of decisions in a row. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But then he had a run of TKOs later and then, of course, took a break in 2017. But unlike many MMA retirements, combat sports retirements, we sometimes feel like, you know, the fighter is going to come back. In this particular case, it doesn't feel like he is going to come back. It feels like he is done. Hip surgery, a very serious thing. So we wish him the best. And again, I thank him dearly for coming on this program and announcing the news. All right. Well, this is very exciting. Let's go from Ben Askren, collegiate amateur wrestling, great professional fighting, great, to one of my favorite pro wrestlers of all time. When I was a youngster, In the Attitude Era, I wasn't necessarily a Stone Cold. I love Stone Cold. I love The Rock. But I loved Mankind. I loved Dude Love. I loved Cactus Jack. I loved that man, Mick Foley, a multiple-time New York Times best-selling author, a three-time WWE champion, a Hall of Famer, man who has seen and done it all. And today, just so happened to pick out the same shirt that I'm wearing. Look at us, Mick. We're wearing the same shirt here. Isn't that amazing?
I think it's much more likely that you picked out the same shirt that I was wearing.
That's right.
The same shirt I've been wearing since 83. Same style shirt, not the same exact shirt. But, you know, in wrestling, you always talk about trying to give somebody something that they either can't follow or you try to provide something they can't follow. It's like, did Ben Askren just announce his retirement from MMA?
Yes.
Right before I went on the air?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
That's not the spot I want to be in. Yeah, that's...
It's a lot of pressure.
This is a conversation no one will remember unless we make it special here. But that's I saw the quick knockout with Jorge, and man, that was my first thoughts always go to the guy, you know, because Ben went down and he was just really motionless. So, man, I'm loving an exciting knockout, but my first thoughts always go to the health of the fighter.
Are you a big MMA fan, Mick? Because correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like early on you weren't a big fan, and over time you sort of warmed up to it. Is that accurate?
Well, actually, I had been a big fan out of the gate in the days where Dan Severn and the Gracies. And then there was that period where it kind of went away. I think, a lot of the politicians were down on it. And when it made its comeback, I just wasn't paying attention that much. And it's just in the last couple of years that I really started tuning in. I got to know some of the fighters. I think UFC in particular does a great job of making you care about fighters you may not have otherwise even heard of. And I get excited. I do enjoy them. I am more along the lines of a fan who will tune in for a big fight and specifically order a pay-per-view. I'm guessing that a lot of the people we're talking to know more about the sport than I do, but I do enjoy it. And, obviously I respect the heck out of it. Leslie Smith was just at one of my one-man shows a few nights ago. I think he was talking to Cesar Gracie here on the show.
Yeah.
He was at my show a couple years ago with Leslie, so I love seeing and talking with the fighters, and I've attended a few shows as well.
I am of the line of thinking that the roots of mixed martial arts are firmly planted in pro wrestling. That MMA has taken a lot of the best of pro wrestling, the showmanship, the hoopla, all that stuff, the glitz and glamour. And at the end of the day, the fights aren't scripted, but it's really just like pro wrestling with real fights, quote unquote. Do you subscribe to that theory as well? Like, do you feel like the best of MMA is when they are taking elements from pro wrestling and utilizing them in the build up to their fights?
Yeah, I think so. I think we borrow from each other. So, I think as soon as I saw the low angle arrival shot at the Democratic Convention like 12 years ago, I was like, oh, they're borrowing from us. but then thankfully, the popularity of MMA has allowed our world to embrace submission wrestling in a way that really wasn't wasn't possible up until, unless you were wrestling in Japan. The Japanese had a better appreciation for what and what does not hurt because of the way the children grow up with the, the different martial arts. And in wrestling, you just couldn't emphasize the pain unless it was something, real pain is something you can't register facially. Something hurts so much that you can't actually sell it, as we say in our trade. But the popularity of MMA has allowed all kinds of submissions to be utilized into professional wrestling in a way that fans can appreciate.
So these days you're no longer wrestling, but you're still very busy. And one of the things that you've worked on over the past few months is this film entitled The Peanut Butter Falcon, which is a lovely film, heartwarming film, and a phenomenal name as well. It's about a young boy who has Down syndrome who dreams of becoming a pro wrestler. You're in the film. Jake Roberts is in the film as well, and it's out right now on DVD, Blu-ray, and digital. Has a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is just absolutely incredible. And I believe it's the highest grossing indie film of 2019 as well. For those that may not have seen it yet, could you tell us what makes this movie so special?
Yeah, I think it's a great story. I think people love a story within a story. And the idea that two guys who had no Hollywood connections wrote a movie specifically for a young man they met at special needs camp for him to star in. He was an aspiring actor, talked about wanting to act, and they wrote a movie just for him and somehow found the financing. They got a great cast together. Shia LaBeouf does a tremendous job. Dakota Johnson is great. Jake Roberts is really good. And Thomas Hayden Church as the saltwater redneck, the reluctant trainer to young Zach, is really good in that role as well. So it's a dynamite cast. It was a really positive experience. And sometimes you don't know until you see the finished product, but I certainly got the feeling from being on set that we were part of something special.
And is this something that you're doing more of these days, or are you trying to be in more films? Are you enjoying being an actor?
The only roles I've ever received are the ones that are written specifically for me. I was told right before we went on the air that your director is a big fan of the Santa Claus documentary I was in.
Yes.
That's called I Am Santa Claus, and it's like a really surprisingly touching holiday film in a very non-Hollywood type of way. But I sit back, and if someone offers me something, I don't know if I've ever done a film shoot that lasted more than 4 or 5 days, but I do enjoy it. Not as much as I enjoy the instant feedback, you know, that I got in wrestling, and I go out and I do these one-man shows, and it's certain nights it feels like you're out there in the ring without getting hurt.
The one-man shows that you're talking about, you're currently celebrating the 20-year anniversary of Have a Nice Day, which I believe I read twice, and I read it while I was in college, and I was actually going through a tough time, and reading about your experiences in college and how you were kind of trying to figure your way. Like you weren't the coolest kid, but you know, you had your vision and your quirks, and just like about some of your experiences as an adolescent really, really spoke to me. In fact, I think you kind of let me know that it was okay to wear, you know, a button down shirt with sweatpants. You know, it's okay to dream of being a pro wrestler. Like you gave all of us weird people, you know, some hope for the future. Did you realize when you were writing that book that it was much more than a pro wrestling book, that it would last 20 years, that people, I know people come up to you all the time and talk to you about it and bring it to you and want you to sign and things like that, that it would speak to, you know, young people like me as well. Did you realize when you're doing that, or did you think that you were just writing a book about your life and this is my life and people can take it as they wish?
I honestly had no idea that it was going to touch people or that it would do well, but I think more importantly that it would affect people the way that it has. I had a ghostwriter that was working on it, and I dispatched him kindly, but I just thought I can do, I thought maybe I can't write any other book in the world, but I believe I can do a better job than he is doing. And it just turned out I had a conversational writing style that people liked. And I wanted to bring a sense of closure to my career because I realized it was winding to it down to an end. But I did not know that it was a book that specifically was going to reach out to people who were either having a tough time or didn't feel like they fit in. And like you said, made them feel like it was okay to be a little bit different.
So this tour that you're going on now, is it you reading from the book or is you just talking about your career? What are people seeing when they come to see you?
Yeah, no, it's definitely not me reading from the book. I'll pick out some stories. And the first night I was thinking, first night in Buffalo last month, I was like, all right, I could try to remember a bunch of things. I could write down a bunch of notes. I could have things all over my hand like I used to when I was the WWE commissioner. Or I could just go out there and see what happens. And so I went out there in Buffalo and really enjoyed myself. Just talked about whatever was on my mind, you know, as it related to the book. And every night I try to go out and give people a little bit different experience, or I try to find, if I am dealing with the same stories, I'll try to find ways to make those stories better. My goal is really just to send people home with a big smile in their face. I do comedy clubs quite a bit because it's such a turnkey operation. You know, you show up, they've got a great stage, perfect setup where the fans are, you know, kind of fanned out around the stage. They've got their own security. But I'm not there to... Some of the stories are funny, but I don't gauge the success of the show on how many laughs I get. I really gauge it on, you know, how people feel when they leave the venue. And usually they have a big smile on their face and they feel like the investment they made in time and money has been worth it.
Physically these days, how are you doing? I mean, I would argue that very few people have dedicated their lives, their bodies to the craft that is professional wrestling like you did. You put your body on the line and a lot of that has been well documented. But here we are several years after the end of your career. How are you doing physically?
Yeah, I would like to speak to Ben. I actually befriended Leslie Smith after she nearly lost her ear. Let her know that I'd been there and was there for support. So I did have a hip and knee replacement 2 years ago that really gave me kind of a new lease on life. It made a big difference. The knee was particularly difficult. I think everyone who has a knee replacement realizes it's more painful than a hip. But in conjunction, it's I'm still not walking great, but there's a phenomenon where I had an experience. It was something completely new to me, and I realized what it was. I was passing people in the airport. Mm. Like I had gone through so many years where I was the guy people were like, excuse me, sir, you know, you move out of the way. And on many occasions, I needed the assistance. It was particularly sad when I would get assistance without asking for it. because of the way my way of walking was so labored and difficult to watch. And so I was getting these offers even before the pain really got to be unbearable. And I couldn't figure out what the pain was. I thought it was a lower back issue for so many years. So I'd get those injections and nothing seemed to work. And finally, a friend of mine said, that sounds like a hip. And I was like, a hip, but it's lower back. And it turns out, you know, your piriformis muscle can get a grip on the lower back and mimic sciatic nerve pain. And once I got to the doctor's office and I saw the x-ray and realized that there was a reason for the pain, it was actually a big relief. So, so I'm not saying that in jest. You know, if Ben would like to talk to somebody who's been through that, I can tell him that it does make an incredible, you know, it's a great improvement in life. Quality of life improves remarkably.
Do you regret putting your body on the line the way in which you did?
Oh, man, that's a tough one, you know, because I will say, like, you know, I wish, looking back, like, I had this mindset that somebody probably traveled a couple hundred miles to see me. And it didn't matter how small the show was. I was bringing my A game every night. And then you get to WWE, you know, especially during the success of the Attitude Era. And their mindset becomes a little bit different in that you look out at a full crowd and you think, all right, there's 18,000 people out there tonight. There's going to be another 18,000 tomorrow. I have to hold something back in a way that I did not when I was younger. So while you could look at it and say, I shouldn't have been dropping elbows off the ring apron onto the concrete in front of 50 or 60 fans, if I hadn't had the mindset that every match is going to be the best match, then I never would have gotten the call from WWE, because I think, you know, and probably even fans who are tuning in for the first time can tell I didn't have a great genetic hand that I'd been dealt with. So I had to do the best I could with what I had.
In 2019, would that Mick Foley have been as successful as in 1999? In other words, would your style translate 20 years later, or do you think you would have had to have been a totally different performer?
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to assume. You shouldn't assume, because I read what happened on a T-shirt once. but I think you have to assume, like, George Mikan would have found a way to be great in today's NBA. You know, the guys who use the two-hand set shot would have had to have adapted. And I did bring a lot of good little tools to the game, but I would, out of necessity, I would have to become a better athlete to compete in today's world. The athleticism is really high. We're at an advantage in a way that MMA athletes are not, in that we can connect better with our audience after our physical skills, you know, have peaked. But nonetheless, like, I did not have a single power move in my entire repertoire. I relied on gravity to a great extent. There was one moment where I saw a match I had with Sting in 1992, where I caught him in midair coming off the second rope, spun around and dropped him in what was known as an Eddie Gilbert hot shot maneuver. And I looked at that, like, how the heck did I pull that off? Like, or even think that I could, because strength was definitely not my game. But I think I could do well. I don't think I would ever have the same set of circumstances that allowed me to do as well as I did.
In the late 90s, when WWE exploded once again, you guys were like rock stars. I mean, it was incredible, the ratings and just the amount of buzz that you were generating. Every Monday night was a real special deal. I watched it. I lived vicariously through it. I loved every second of it. And I'm wondering now, you know, we talk to fighters when, you know, the career is over and there's less attention on you and how you deal with it. You're dealing with the aches and pains. Do you ever go back into the rabbit hole and relive, like, as a fan, I relive those days just because I want to, you know, be nostalgic. But as someone who actually experienced those days, do you ever go back on YouTube or WWE Network and relive the day you won, you know, the belt for the first time, or any other moment that means something to you? Or is that a dangerous thing to go through?
I think it is dangerous. My opinion is that my matches don't hold up as well to the test of time as I hope they would. But I remember my son, Huey, when he was younger, was always kind of busting on me about not being as good as, you know, legend had it. And I told my wife, it's funny. Huey, he was like five or six at the time. And he said, My wife goes, no, he's not busting on you. I was like, no, you know, he jokes around with the old man. And she goes, no, he's not joking. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, Mick, he doesn't think you were good. And I said, but Mick, you know, I almost dropped an F-bomb. Like, Mick, Foley. And she said, don't take this the wrong way. And Ariel, nothing good can follow from a sentence that begins with the words, don't take this the wrong way. She said, he doesn't see how someone who looks like you could have ever been one of those guys on his TV screen. So when he came home from preschool, I had the DVD with me and The Rock all set up. And it was the craziest thing because within 2 minutes, both he and my other son, Mickey, were cheering for Dwayne. And even after I won, which I thought would be this great celebratory moment, my son turns to me, he was like 4 or 5 at the time, and he goes, Dad, that's really not believable that I would be able to defeat Dwayne Johnson. I don't tend to go back because my whole show is based on telling stories that make the matches sound better than they were, not having to live with the reality that maybe some of them weren't quite as good as I thought.
4 children, correct?
Yes.
Any of them going to be pro wrestlers?
Well, my oldest son, Dewey, he's on the creative team with WWE.
Oh, really?
And he's really well, yeah. And it's funny because he was the only one of the 4 children that I butted heads with. And it turns out that butting heads with his old man was probably the best life experience he could have accumulated because now he butts heads with Mr. McMahon. So,
oh my gosh.
So many people are afraid to because Vince is a larger than life billionaire. And they would tell me from like day one, my son was not shy about expressing his views, taking no for an answer in a way that's not always polite. But he's really become a mainstay of that product. And my daughter kind of dabbled in it. You know, she's got quite a presence on social media. She was in a reality show that we did where she was training to wrestle, but, some people's bodies are just not built for the wear and tear. She's got a beautiful long swan's neck, that is, you know, is great for modeling, but not really good for being thrown backwards.
Yeah.
You know, the Brock Lesnar style. So I'm glad she's out of it.
The infamous Kane Dewey is now a member of the WWE creative team? That's what you're telling me?
Yeah, he sure is. I just have to mention the two things. I'm going to mention specifically something about my teeth, and then I'm going to get a gratuitous plug-in for my tour, if you don't mind.
Please.
I just got a bottom flipper.
Okay.
For my teeth. These were knocked out in that match with The Undertaker. Put back in. They were in a glass of milk waiting for me. And then over time started deteriorating. And I thought it was, it took away from my role as Santa every December to have nasty blue and gray teeth. So I did just get a flipper and I made the conscious decision to not wear it for this interview because of who you are.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah. I don't know if it was the right call or not.
Is that a compliment?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah,
oh,
I think it is.
Wow.
He's not the fan. All right. I don't know what he does. He's certainly missing a lot of teeth. Got that ear thing going on. He's missing some teeth. So
you're tough.
Really paid some type of price. And the other thing is if people are interested in seeing my show, they can go to realmickfoley.com. And I'll be in Columbus tomorrow, Cleveland, Toledo, Dayton, Pittsburgh, and then a whole bunch of shows in 2020.
Okay. And by the way, before I let you go, were you surprised? I saw you tweet about it, but were you surprised to see CM Punk return after everything he's been through with WWE? Are you surprised to see him back in some capacity?
Yeah, I knew we all come back eventually.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Don Corleone said, you know, just when I think I'm out, they drag me back in. We all come back in. But in the same way that absolutely nobody will be talking about my appearance after Ben announced his retirement, I was a special guest on that WWE backstage show. Had no idea Punk was there. And certainly I never even saw my name mentioned in a single comment because that was the news of the day. But I'm glad he's back. I was always very supportive of him. You know, I understood his frustration, and he did what he thought he had to do. Things didn't go his way in MMA, but it certainly wasn't due to a lack of effort. And you can go home again. So when it comes to WWE, you can go home again.
Yeah, because you had your falling out as well, and you came back, right?
Several fallings out.
Yeah.
So it's funny is I was brought back a couple of years ago to give a promotional interview for Hell in a Cell, and I think Vince McMahon brought up my name as a way to add some spice to the event, and somebody said, I thought Mick Foley had heat with the company, and Vince said, I don't give a damn if he's got heat. Can he get interest? So all it takes is a phone call. I don't care who you are or how bitter you think you are at the company. When you see that 203 area code coming your way, you perk up. But I'll tell you, I'll leave you with this story. It's always an ongoing battle. Mr. McMahon didn't care for the Foley sweatpants, right?
Yes.
And I got an invite a few years ago to be part of SummerSlam to do a segment with Jon Stewart. And so I asked the head of talent relations, I said, let me ask you this. I said, did John specifically ask for me? And they said, yes, he did. I said, good. And I'm wearing sweatpants. Because I was appearing like little sophomore battles you wage, to get a little victory on Mr. McMahon. So I get ready to go out, and I'm in what we call the gorilla position, which is that curtained off area, the last thing you see before you, you go down the ramp. And Mr. McMahon sizes me up. He goes, lose the fanny pack. And I was like, all right, I'll lose the fanny pack. I'm going to take these small victories where I can get them. So, yeah, I am a man with a flannel shirt and sweatpants, and I appreciate everyone who supports what I do and allows me to go through life looking this way.
Oh, you are a legend, my friend. And honestly, it's a huge honor for me. Like 1998, Ariel, 16 years old, we would all gather around every month at my friend's house, watch the pay-per-views, and you are our guy. We loved you. And to have you on my show today, to have you even say my name is a massive honor for me. So, congratulations on everything. I hope the tour goes great. And again, I want to remind people, The Peanut Butter Falcon is a phenomenal movie. You can get it right now. DVD. Blu-ray, digital. It is a heartwarming film. If you're not a pro wrestling fan, it has nothing to do. It's really a lot more than that. If you are, you will enjoy it as well. But it's really just, as it says on the box right over there, the sweetest darn film of the decade. Shia LaBeouf is great in it. Everyone's great in it. And it's cool to see you in it as well, Mick. Thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate you doing this. And I appreciate you doing it via Skype, because I heard that was a big thing to get you to do it that way.
The only other time I did Skype was when I got ejected from a chicken wing eating contest for hiding wings in my fanny pack. And so I did do it. It's you guys in TMZ. I was going through great lengths to try to figure out how to use Skype last night, and I'm glad I did.
We appreciate it. All the best to you. And hopefully one of these days we can meet in person as well.
I like that. I love it. Can I just say in closing, I've been to a handful of MMA events, and the guy, not only the fighters, but the fans, not only the fans, but the fighters go out of their way. It's a really kind atmosphere. Dana's very, very accommodating, really appreciate it. It's really nice to have that cross section. I know you'll probably receive a handful of complaints about having a wrestler on your show, but I think by and large, people respect it and understand the work that goes into it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mick. All the best to you.
Thank you, Ariel. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, there he is.
Have a nice day.
Yes, there he is, Mick Foley. And if in case you're a fan of Ariel and the Bad Guy on ESPN Plus, at the very beginning when I say right here on ESPN Plus, it's in honor of Mick Foley, by the way. So there's your little connection between the two. All right, now let's move along to our next guest. It has been a while since I've talked to this individual. I think maybe 3 or 4 years, perhaps even more. But after last week's news regarding Nick Diaz and, of course, the recent rise of Nathan Diaz, I thought it would be interesting to catch up once again with the great Cesar Gracie, who is kind enough to join us right now via the magic of Skype. There he is, Cesar. It has been a long time, my friend. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it. So, I was thinking about you last week after reconnecting with Nick and everything going on with Nate. And, we don't see you around Nick and Nate as much these days, but I was wondering what you thought of, what they've become. And, certainly Nick's announcement, so to speak, of wanting to come back. How do you feel about what they've become after all the time you spent with them, especially early on in their careers?
I kind of expected it, really. I expected big things from those guys and everything. And I actually had a really long talk with Nick yesterday, if you will. He called me out of the blue. I was hanging out, and last night at some point, all of a sudden, I got a a FaceTime call from him, and we had a really good conversation, which was awesome. But I wanted to say one thing real quick is that Mick Foley, he's actually a great guy that you just had on, and I was fortunate enough to attend one of his shows. He's friends with Leslie Smith, and they had me there you go, man.
How about that?
You guys do your research, man. That's pretty cool.
You went to his show, right?
Over there. Yeah, and see that shirt he's wearing right there? He gave me one of those, and I have it to this day. And it was a really funny show, and we had a great time. So I'm a fan of his, too.
Okay, yeah. He actually mentioned you at the top of the interview because he saw that you'd be on, and he said the same. I'm curious. Did Nick call you because he knew that you were going to be on the show, or was it just a coincidence?
Just a complete coincidence.
Wow.
He's out in, he was in New York. He's still in New York. I think you interviewed him in New York not too long ago. And just out of the blue, he called me. We were talking about some stuff, which I thought was interesting. It was jiu-jitsu stuff and fight stuff, actually. So, you know, and unlike, you know, I mean, I might want to tell the people watching that me and you spoke after that interview, and I was kind of concerned about it because he kind of was all over the map more than he usually is. And I was a little just like, what's going on here, you know? But I'm happy to say that yesterday when he spoke to me, he was completely lucid and coherent. And, you know, he's still all over the map, but it was the old Nick Diaz talking to me.
Okay.
It wasn't the guy heard in the interview. And that was really good for me to hear. Yeah.
When was the last time you spoke to him prior to last night?
We speak probably once every month or so, or
okay,
a couple months sometimes. Sometimes a couple months. It's not like... You know, we still communicate. I mean, I was training the guy since he was 16. So it's like, almost like family, if you will. You know what I mean? I got love for the guy. I care about the guy. I care, you know, if I see him doing something wrong, it actually hurts me, you know, to be honest with you. So we do speak. We're just on two different paths. He started hanging out over there in the Vegas club life and everything, and I'm not part of that. I can't be part of that. That's not what I'm about. And you know, so we do speak, and I'm trying to, like, when we speak, I try to tug him over, you know what I mean? Hey, come on, man, let's do this. Let's get back into training, you know what I mean? Let's get back into being a martial artist, because I really don't care if Nick ever fights again, to be honest with you. That's not what my concept of a martial artist is, as a cage fighter. But I do. He's got so much to share. I mean, the guy is a brilliant tactician. He's a genius. You know, he really is. People don't understand how smart Nick really is. You know, he might make some life choices that aren't the greatest. Yeah, there's me with that BJ too. Another guy that trained with us for a long time. Yeah, there's Nate right there before Conor McGregor fight. And and you got the good picks, bro.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about that and everything. There's Rhonda. That's before she got all famous and everything like that. She came out. And Yancey and, you know, the crew there. But I care about Nick. I got love for him. And, you know, I try to bring him over to, like, you don't have to fight if it's not going to be a good thing for you. But I want you to teach. I want you to give back what you have. Because the guy, I've never met anybody like that. The guy's like he's a genius, to be honest with you, when it comes to fighting. When it comes to fighting, when it comes to jiu-jitsu, when it comes to boxing, when it comes to anything related with fighting, the guy, there's no one, he sees through all the fluff, and he gets to the heart of the matter, and he says, you need to do this, this, and this. I mean, I watched him. He's really was the guy that, I don't know, he's the brains of the, you know, bringing up his brother up, like Nathan, for example. And kind of when he was helping Nate a lot with his fights and everything. But I want him involved in martial arts that's where I want him at.
Do you want to see him return to fighting, or would you rather not?
If it's good for him, after I saw that interview with you, I was kind of concerned, Errol, to be honest with you. I was like, man, maybe this guy, has he gotten some CTE damage here? What's going on here? And no one wants to see that, you know, who cares about the money and stuff? Your health and your life is forever. It's the other stuff is just, you know, ancillary type of stuff. So, but talking to him yesterday, I felt like he's got the fire back. I felt like he's got, man, this guy, and we're coordinating some good stuff. You know what I mean? Now, I'm not going to tell you exactly what we talked about. I can tell you my opinion and my thoughts. I want to see him fight Masvidal. That's my thing. I want that fight to happen. And I kind of relayed that to him. You know, I said, hey, you got to remember that I set up every fight Nick's ever had, even the last fight with Anderson Silva. I've been working with Anderson's his manager for a while, for a few years, but it never got together because it wasn't the right time. And finally, at the end, you know, those guys, Ed and those, you know, they called up and they talked to my boy Victor Galvin, who really, you know, said, "Hey Nick, this is the fight." You know what I mean? So every fight he's ever had, I had some kind of participation in, if you will. And so that's pretty much it. And then this one, I'm like, "Hey man, this is the guy I want you to fight. I want you to fight this guy, Masvidal." You know, so we'll see. You know how Nick is with everything, but if I get my way, that's the fight that will be set up.
If he does come back to fighting, will you be in his corner again?
Yes, I'm trying to think of a fight. The only time I wouldn't be in a fight in Nick's corner before, I was there for, I was Anderson Silva, I wasn't Anderson Silva, but I was there at the fights, exactly. But, actually I was at Anderson Silva. I wasn't at the GSP, but I was at the fight. I think I would be in his corner for this, yes.
And
I would do that. I got love for that guy. I would do it.
And like, do you train with him these days, or is it because, as you mentioned, you know, he's in Vegas? My theory is that he didn't really have like an early 20s. He was so focused on diet and training that now he's almost, you know, having his early 20s as a 35-year-old or so, that he almost had to do it backwards and trying to get it out of his system. Is that what you're seeing as well from him? And is this something that's somewhat common for like a prodigy, if you will, to now kind of let his hair down later on in his career?
I think so too. I think he didn't have the normal life of another person. He's been fighting since he was a teenager, really. You know, yeah. I remember in one capacity or another, not just pro fights, but pancrase fights that weren't on his record. So since he was 16, 17 years old, he's been fighting, and he didn't really have a youth that you would think a person should have. And it's almost like imagine having a fight camp. Right after your fight, you've got another fight camp, and you're fighting continuously like that throughout the year forever. It's tough on a person, and I think it was tough on him. And I think, part of his thing is definitely that, you know what I mean? Other stuff is, a lot of times what makes a great fighter is like, I think it's, if you will, for lack of a better word, it's like inner demons or something like that. And I think, you know, that's what made him the angry person, the tough guy and everything. And maybe, you know, the letting loose a little bit is a way to kind of finding himself, if you will.
How do you think he feels about the fact that I asked him this question, but, you know, again, sometimes he's not going to tell you exactly how he feels about the fact that his brother has become so popular, and you can make the case that he's become even more popular than Nick, especially due to the time off. Do you think he likes that, or do you think he feels weird about that?
He's never mentioned negatively, something like that. You got to remember that if Nick comes back tomorrow, he's the most popular guy on the scene immediately. So mm-hmm. It's really up to him. It's not like someone's taking something away from him. I know what you mean about a brotherly thing, and maybe I don't think he has the same influence he had over his brother that he did in the past, obviously, when they were younger, and Nick was really said, "Hey, you do this," and Nate's going to jump to do it. You know, Nate now is, he's married or not married. I don't know. He's with a lovely woman, Misty. He's got a kid, and he doesn't really do the same type of regimen. Like Nick can't just say, "Hey, you're going to go do this now. You're going to travel." So you got to remember, if he comes, the guy in the world right off the bat.
And the idea, you know, I remember when the UFC tried to book Nate versus GSP, Nate said, "That's my brother's fight. I'm not going to go after that fight." Knowing Nate like you do, knowing Nick like you do, how do you think Nate would feel about the fact that Nick would fight Jorge? Because it does seem like Nate still really wants that rematch. Do you think he'd be okay with that?
You'd have to ask Nate, you know, to be honest with you. I don't want to speak for him. I assume he'd be okay with that. You got to remember that Nick fought Gomi. And then Nate fought Gomi. Nick fought Josh Neer, who's on our team now, oddly enough, and he's a great guy. And then Nate fought Josh Neer. So they've got, I think they fought three or four of the same guys already.
Okay.
you know, Joe Hurley, a bunch of guys, you know. So there's a lot of precedence for that. It's not I couldn't see what the problem was, to be honest with you.
And I don't see you at the events as much these days. What have you been up to? Obviously, you still have the academy, and I know that you train people, but are you doing less training of pro fighters these days?
100% less, to be honest with you. You know, what happened was I had a couple kids myself, and when that comes into your life, you know, I'm about my children more than anything. You know, back in the day, I think I had something to prove. I wanted to be the best coach in the world. That was my thing. I wanted to be the best. That takes a lot of time. You're babysitting people. You're literally babysitting grown men. You're traveling the world, or at least the United States, constantly. You're always at the gym. It's no way for a person to live. You're not all these guys, you know, they got their own gym. So I'm traveling to their gyms all the time. I'm never at home. I'm not there for my kids, really. I remember one time when Nick, he didn't go to the, I think it was the GSP thing in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, the press conference.
Yeah.
And I had to, I literally drove out there like at 6 a.m. I spent my whole day trying to track Nick down to get on that plane. And then it was, and I'm thinking, this is so crazy. That day was my son's birthday, you know, and it was just, it's hard. You know what I mean? You're missing, you're doing things, and it's like, okay, you know what I mean? But, and end of the day, you know, a lot of the guys you train, they grow up. You know, they got nothing when you start with them. They're nobodies, and you bring them on board. You don't charge them anything. You know, when they become multimillionaires, all of a sudden the dynamic changes between the coach. I've never been one to like make contracts with fighters or anything like that. Or, hey, you know, one day you're going to, but you kind of expect something from some of them. You know what I mean? And then they're superstars, and they completely forget about you. It's just they go their way. Thank you very much. Well, I'm rich now. I'm doing my thing. And, you know, they'll give you a shout out sometimes, but they're not, how do you explain? You're not in their camp anymore or something. So that type of stuff happens, and it's disheartening. So I kind of took a page off of my cousin Henzo. I'm over at his gym, and I'm thinking, man, this guy's doing such an awesome job. He's, you know, he's not really chasing fighters. He doesn't even have any fighters himself, none. He lets someone else train him or something, but he's changing lives. He's doing things like, you know, he's making people happy. He's doing right by his family. I kind of want to be more like that. That's what I'm thinking.
Do you have a, you mentioned you just spoke to Nick last night. Do you have a relationship with Nate these days?
I really have not trained Nate since after the first McGregor fight, and he got that fight on a couple weeks' notice.
Yeah.
And it was like, I came out there. I think I went out there once or twice to help with his training. I brought a guy with me, a stand-up guy, a really good guy, and I had him, you know, help and everything. And then Nate obviously did the fight and won, and I think he made like $3 million or something. And I never heard from Nate again. I mean, it was like, you know, I mean, it's sad to say, but I love Nate and everything. But that's what I'm talking about. It's just like, oh man, you know what I mean? You just never hear from the guys, and they're making tens of millions of dollars to give you a shout out sometimes, but they got what they needed from you. And now that they make the money and everything, they got the fame. They kind of just, it's see you later type of thing.
Does that hurt you?
Oh, for sure. For sure. It hurts, you know, because these people are like family members to me, to be honest with you. I mean, I got love for them. I, you know, Nick hurt me in a different way, but not from like not having me. It was just more like from him going to the clubs and everything like that. And it's like, dude, this is not what we, because when I met these kids, you know, Nate was 14, Nick was 16, and I'm like, they don't have any money to pay the academy. You bring them in, you know, you do all this stuff, and you just want to change lives. It's like, I'm an idealist, I'm a martial artist, I'm a traditionalist, you know what I mean? So when someone kind of does something, of course it hurts, you know, because they become like family members to you.
Do you feel confident that you can get Nick back on track? Do you want to be a part of that process of getting him out of the clubs, as you say, and focused on training and all that?
Definitely, definitely. Like I said, whether he fights or not, I could care less, to be honest with you. I mean, if he's gonna fight, of course I've got my opinions. I'm a fan of Nick's, just like most people listening to this are right now. I love Nick, and I've never seen a guy fight like him. He's so exciting. He pours heart and soul into his fights. You can just sense what kind of a guy he is. You know, I remember I had this really well-known fighter. She's a lady, and I'm not going to mention who she is, but she was watching that fight, and she literally, she was backstage, and she said, Caesar, I cry every time I see this guy fight. It's like, I see his soul in the fight. I see all the pain, all the everything, him being a soldier for your team and everything. So if he's going to fight, I'd definitely be a part of it and everything. And I'd want to be there for him, with him and everything. But if he's not going to fight, I just want him to be a martial artist. He told me he's opening a gym in Hollywood. I said, hey, let me know when it's open. I want to be there. I want to help you. We're actually discussing maybe opening a gym together in Las Vegas. It could be a real thing. You know what I mean? Because he wants to have a place in Vegas. Not that he wants to live in Vegas, actually. But there's a lot of business opportunities. He said, Caesar, you know, the reason isn't just I'm not here to party. There's a lot of business things here in Vegas. And so he, when he's there, he wants to have a place to train, and he wants to, you know, he doesn't want to go back to Stockton. He loves Stockton, but the last time he was there, he told me he almost got shot. You know, he just had his house robbed. Someone took his car, it was like everything in his house was just stolen. You know what I mean? And I was in Stockton yesterday, you know, visiting the guys over there. And it was like, it's a rough town, man. It was like, you know, some areas, it's like, it's pretty rough. And so Nick doesn't want that scene anymore, really. He loves Stockton, but it's like, it's getting crazy. You know what I mean? So he's thinking more Los Angeles. Obviously he's opening a school in Hollywood, and he wants to have a place in Vegas. And I'm in talks with someone to open a school in Vegas. So Nick said, hey, why don't we do it together? So I would be into that. You know what I mean? Cause I know it would provide him a place to train, and then people could see what a good teacher he is and he has a knowledge of a fight game that few people have on this planet.
I'm happy that you mentioned our phone call last week, because I was surprised to hear from you because it's been so long. And mm-hmm. I'm happy to see that you've done a 180 almost after speaking to him yesterday, because to be honest, when I spoke to you last week, I was sad to hear how sad you were that you were kind of worried about his state after listening to the interview. But now you're saying that he sounds like a completely different guy just a few days later, and that you're a lot more hopeful. That gives me hope as well, because I wasn't quite sure what to make of the interview as well.
Yeah, I was a little bit. I saw the interview. I saw the some of the comments and everything. I mean, he's always been all over the place, but that was definitely different. Let's face it. And you know what people don't know is, and then you told me that the interview you did with him, Mario, was actually done at midnight, right? So I think he might have been out partying, maybe doing whatever, and he kind of came on the show. I'm not sure. I don't want to speak for him, but it certainly seemed like it. And yesterday when he hit me up, he was still in New York. He was laughing. He was very coherent. He had some really good ideas. You know, he's always kind of knows where he's going in a certain respect, you know, through all the muddling and everything like that. I mean, he expresses himself in a different way than most people, for sure. But he's always kind of been like that, you know, and he was back to the old Nick when I talked to him yesterday, you know, having fun and kind of just, you know, he had a game plan. He's very confident. He's like, man, I'm going to beat this guy by this, or I'd beat this guy like this. You know, he's just kind of, the mind was sharp. And I was like, oh man, thank God. You know what I mean? He's not crazy right now. So it was like, okay, maybe that's just when he parties or something. That's how he gets. I don't know, but he sounded really good. So I was happy for him.
Okay. And by the way, why do you want the Masvidal fight? Like you said that's the fight that you want him to go after. Why that one?
Well, because that is his belt. What's it called? The BMF. Yeah, BMF belt. That is Nick's belt. Nick is the BMF, if you will. You know what I mean? So that's him. That's like the perfect belt for Nick. I just thought it was like, okay, this thing fits for him. You know what I mean? And I thought, man, the hype on something like that would be so huge, you know what I mean, to fight a guy like that. I don't want to – I mean, you got to get fighters that are doing something now. And with the Masvidal fight with Nate, I did watch it and everything. And I thought, okay, this guy's got really good hands. You know, he's a tough fighter. But I think Nick at his best – I don't know how Nick would do. Nick has to be in shape. But the Nick Diaz that I've seen at his – the Nick Diaz I've seen at his best, or anywhere near it, he crushes guys like that. He's just, you know, I mean, it'd be like, I think it would be great for the fans that don't know who Nick Diaz is. And let's face it, there's a lot of new fans in the sport, and Nick has been out for a long time. The fans that don't know who Nick Diaz is, that would be a great showcase for him to come back to.
Yeah, what a story with you by his side once again, just like the old days. It would be great to see. Yeah. I appreciate you doing this, Caesar. It's been a long time, like I said. Great to catch up with you. Thank you for doing it, and all the best to you as far as your gyms are concerned and everything you're doing back home. And, of course, reconnecting with Nick here. This is a story that I think is worth watching. So thank you very much for doing it and for updating us as well.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
All right. Appreciate that. There he is, Caesar Gracie. Great to talk to him after all these years. Great to catch up once again, and we shall see. Nothing. It's definitely something you saw, the back and forth on Instagram and all that. It's definitely out there. I would be shocked if something happened before January 18th. That's when Conor fights. I think Masvidal's side wants to see what happens with the Conor fight, but it is certainly on the radar. There's, of course, the title fight on December 14th. Jorge Masvidal has options, and one of them is a pretty big one with Nick Diaz. So we'll see how it all pans out. Now, at the top of the show, we spoke to Junior Dos Santos. He's fighting in the main event January 25th in Raleigh, North Carolina. The co-main, which I kind of think should be the main because I want to see five rounds of this, is a fascinating one and a massive one for our next guest. It is Frankie Edgar going up against Corey Sandhagen, the biggest fight of Corey Sandhagen's career. And he's kind enough to join us right now via the magic of Skype. Corey, how are you?
I'm good, Ariel. How are you, man?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for doing this. By the way, do you feel like it should be the main event? Because I feel like Blades Dos Santos doesn't have as much of a chance of going five rounds. You and Edgar do. So did you hope that it was the main event, or are you disappointed it's the co-main?
I would have liked five rounds too, just for the experience and just for what I would have probably learned from Frankie going another 10 minutes with him, but... I'm okay with it. I would have preferred for it to be five rounds just so I could get a crack at that before I have that be the title shot. But it doesn't matter to me too much, man. I'm just pumped to be fighting Frankie.
What was your reaction when you got the word that you were fighting Frankie Edgar, the legend, in your next fight?
Yeah, the legend. I was really excited, man. He is a legend, you know, like he's been around the sport for forever. I think I heard the other day his first fight was in 2005. I was 13 when that happened, which is crazy to think about, you know, and it kind of got me thinking about like the importance of a belt versus like fighting guys that are at the level of Frankie. And, you know, like I would almost say that if I was offered to fight Cejudo for a belt or fight Frankie Edgar before he retires, like it'd be really hard for like me to convince myself that it wouldn't be cooler to fight Frankie before he retires. So I'm really excited about it.
Any part of you surprised that in his bantamweight debut that they put him up against you, you know, rising star, a lot younger, that maybe he didn't ease his way into the division?
I mean, I was curious about that too. I think it's just Frankie's not afraid to run from a fight. I do think that I'm probably the toughest matchup for him, like in that top five. But I kind of think that way about everyone. Like I think that I'm probably one of the tougher matchups for anyone in the top five, so I think he was probably given a few options, probably wasn't me. And then with all of the matchups that are happening in December now, I mean, it's either me or no one, and I kind of knew that. So I think that that's kind of the situation that we have, is just there's no one else for him to really fight that's going to do anything for him.
In that, you mentioned all those fights that are being made right now at 135, the ones coming up in December, now in January. Was this always the fight? Because I'd heard that Frankie was going to fight Aljamain for a little bit, but then he had surgery on his wrist. Were you being talked about to fight any of the other guys as well before they landed on Frankie?
No, I wasn't told about Frankie. I actually wasn't really given too many names, which I wasn't going to try to press for one either. I was going to kind of let it happen naturally a little bit because I wanted to really kind of slow down my training and focus on some different skills instead of just jump back into another training camp like I kind of did all year. So, I mean, I was okay with it. I wasn't being forceful about like wanting to fight someone next. But I mean, it landed where it landed, and I'm happy with the fight against Frankie.
Anything in particular that you felt you needed more time to work on?
It's not necessarily working on stuff, man, but like the evolution of martial arts happens so fast, especially with kind of how popular it is now. So like, if you're not keeping up with like the new things that are happening or, practicing being different, because when you're in a cage and you have 15 minutes, 25 minutes to figure someone out, like that's not a long time if I'm doing some different stuff and some stuff that you haven't even really seen in the game before. So I was just more trying to add certain things, not necessarily work on anything that I felt like I was lacking. It was more creating things that I would artistically like to display better.
Do you feel like a win over Frankie Edgar gets you that title shot?
I don't know, man. Like, I think that I still think I'm the biggest threat to Cejudo and the belt. I think Frankie's, even though he's coming down to 135, definitely should be top five, top three in this division as well. So to me, it seems like the two best guys and the best matchup to watch for a contender fight is me and Frankie. I think that the other ones are still very good and definitely arguments for those ones too. But like I said, man, I think that I'm the only one that really contends that or is a real contender at beating Cejudo. So I don't know. I it's not up for me to decide, but I've been saying this for a really long time, man. Whenever the UFC wants to give me the belt and give me a crack at it, I'll take it.
Did you get a lot of heat for that when you said that you were the, you know, the biggest test for Henry Cejudo, the biggest threat to him? Sometimes the fans will be like, how dare you say something like that? Did you get a lot of that?
I did a little bit, but to be honest with you, man, I don't really read the comments and a lot of like the forums and the pages and stuff, just because I don't like the idea of like Joe Schmo across the street, who's probably eating Cheetos while he's scrolling through his Instagram page and doesn't know anything about fighting, has such a platform for him to say whatever he wants, and then have like thousands or tens of thousands of people read it and maybe think that he's right. You know, I don't like the idea of like that even being in my head. So I actually don't read a lot of the comments. I will occasionally, like I was glad to see that like people were excited about this matchup, but no, I don't read into the comments too much. So I don't even really know what was said about that.
I did notice you changed your name on Instagram. Why is that?
Yep. Sandman's easier to remember than skinny white guy with the back tattoo, I think.
But wasn't it like Coors Light?
It was Coors Light, but that was something from like a long time ago. It was kind of like a silly joke with me and my buddies, but I wanted it to be Enter the Sandman because I'm a Bruce Lee fan and Enter the Dragon is one of my favorite movies, so Enter the Sandman felt appropriate.
Okay. Uh-huh. By the way, the headphones are a fascinating thing to look at right now. How how difficult is this? Do you usually not wear headphones like this?
Dude, I gotta like twist them and fork them in like I'm trying to open up a bottle of wine, but like once they're in there, man, they're not coming out.
Okay. Is it comfortable?
It's not uncomfortable when you're used to it, I guess.
Okay.
But, I mean, to you, it definitely be.
It looks, yeah. Yeah. What is that supposed to mean?
You need to get some bigger ears, man. You're not rugged enough.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. No, but what, like, why not just use like the cans?
Oh, I'm not really a can guy, man. Just right. Not a can guy.
You do post a lot of like beats and bars, I should say. Bars, poetry, things
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. What's that all about?
I'm really, I wouldn't say crazy about it, but studying fights is fun, and then studying philosophy is also fun for me. So, like, especially guys that, like, what are they called, like, transcendental philosophers or something. Just kind of like the Carl Jungs, the Joseph Campbells, the Krishnamurtis. Krishnamurti was actually someone that Bruce Lee actually based off of, like, a lot of what Bruce Lee says is a lot of, like, Krishnamurti stuff. Actually, not a lot of people know that, but... yeah, just studying stuff like that, man, it helps. Like, it helps, like, transcend, like, all of, like, the kind of BS in the world that we got going on and reminds you that, what's really important is that you're creating the best self that you can create for yourself and everything else is cool, but you got to keep your eyes on that. You know, it's very important to have that be the biggest goal, which is actually another reason why I was really excited to fight Frankie, because I think Frankie would have been, or he is the toughest fight for me in the division too. And, that's what I want, man. I want someone that's going to push me to be better, and that's what I'm striving for.
These excerpts that you find, how do you decide, okay, I'm going to read this and post this? Like, do you get this from someone else? Are you just reading books and something, you know, grabs your attention? How do you decide what you're going to read? I mean, there's just so much out there that you can read, right?
Yeah. I follow a lot of those hashtags, like Carl Jung hashtag, okay. Consciousness hashtag. But I don't really like the ones that are just very motivational. You know, I think that we live in a world where everyone wants to be a motivator, which I think is good for some people. But if it's not you, it's not very good. for me, a lot of the things that I'll post are things that like kind of point out like the darkness in quotations of people, which I think that those motivating people kind of shy away from. They want to only listen to the happy, jolly voice inside of their head because it gets them motivated. It gets that endorphin kick. But for me, it's more fun for me to kind of like dig into like, all right, like, what bad voices do we have going on in my head, you know, and like, and who is that voice and why is that voice there? What happened to me in the past for that darkness to be inside of me, and addressing that so that I can kind of have it under control versus kind of just like being the over motivating type where it's like, oh, I got a bad voice. Let's go on a 50-mile run. You know, that just doesn't work for me. But I try to keep them kind of in that area. So they seem a little dark, but it's all in the name of like finding a greater light, you know?
I like it. I dig it.
Yeah, thanks.
Your birthday is April 20th, right?
Yeah, what kind of joke are you going to make about that, Ariel?
No, I'm not that kind of guy. But there is a happy birthday balloon above your head, so I was wondering who just celebrated.
No, actually, yeah, there's stuff. I'm actually at the Easton's martial arts staff room. I didn't even know that you noticed that. But yeah, there's a bigger one over here. I was going to put that maybe in the background, but
whose birthday was it?
Weren't appropriate. I have no idea. It says "Love you, Steph" on the wall, so I don't know. Maybe Steph's. I don't know who that is, though.
Okay. I know you have to go to practice now, so I don't want to keep you waiting. I'll end on this if I can. Did you watch Frankie's last fight? And do you feel like he's just as? I mean, Father Time is undefeated, right? At some point, everyone slows down. Do you feel like he's just as dangerous, or do you feel like you're catching him on the tail end of his career?
I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't think that I was catching him at the tail end of his career. That being said, I don't think that he's still definitely no one that you can take lightly. I think that his coming down to 135 is probably going to be, I think, in his benefit. I think Frankie's a really smart guy, so I don't think he's going to be dumb about his weight cut. I don't think he's going to allow that to affect it, because he'll lose it in a smart way throughout the weeks instead of trying to lose it all at the end. So I think Frankie's smart. He's going to come down to 35 and be really good. I think Max definitely shut down a lot of things for Frankie and kind of displayed a lot of holes that he does have with stuff. So I think that's going to be a good fight to watch. But like I said, like, I think Frankie's probably going to be better at 35. And although he kind of is at the tail end of his career, I still think he's super dangerous, and I think that he's very, very skilled. So yeah, I mean, I still have to be the best that I can, but that's what I'm looking for. So good.
Good to catch up with you as always, Corey. I'm excited for this one. What a big fight it is. Great opportunity for you. Thank you for doing the show as always.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on, Ariel. I appreciate it, bro.
All right, there he is, Corey Sanhagen. Huge fight for him on January 25th in Raleigh, North Carolina, against Frankie Edgar. Edgar making his 135-pound debut. For a minute there, it seemed like maybe the Conor thing was going to be a thing, but it is not a thing, and now he's going down finally to 135, something that Mark Henry, his longtime head coach, has wanted him to do. So we'll see how he looks at 135. Started as a 155er, went down to 145, fought for the belt a couple times there, didn't win. Now going down to 135 for one last hurrah. All right, before we move along to our next guest, let me tell you, as you look at the lineup, at least for now, for the January 25th card, what is this music? Is this Brazilian music?
It was a little dealer's choice.
Viewer's choice?
Dealer's choice.
Dealer's choice.
Here, yeah.
What does that mean?
Left it in the hands of our director and our AD.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Let me tell you about our good friends over at Roman. As you know, talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a real doctor who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple as well. Just go to roman.com/Ariel, A-R-I-E-L, and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to roman.com/Ariel to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's getroman.com/Ariel for a free visit to get started. Getroman.com/Ariel. Support us because they support them. No, I said that wrong. Support them because they support us. That is a good lineup on January 25th. Thank you to our good friends over at Roman. In a matter of moments, we are going to be joined. I have a feeling I'm going to hear from the editor of our MMA page in a matter of seconds, whose name is Roman, who may have gotten excited there for a second that he was sponsoring our show. I don't even know if he I don't even know if he knows that he is named after that company, or shares the same name. I shouldn't say named after, shares the same name as that company. But there you have it. It all kind of flows. Let me put this back here now that Ben is gone. But that was interesting. You know, I don't put the toys out on the desk before the show. I'm not really quite sure who does. Is it Corporate Jake, or does he make someone else do it these days because he's a big shot?
No, I still do the setup.
You still do it? Okay. Yeah. Now, did you put, like no, you could have put the Masvidal on one. You could have put Masvidal, like, towards the end of the table so he didn't see it in the two shot.
I thought it made for great content.
Yeah. Well, it did. Sort of. I mean, it took him like 30 minutes to notice it. Watch what back? The moment? Sure. Let's watch back in case you missed it. Here's Ben noticing that the Jorge Masvidal bobblehead, in honor of the knee that was heard around the world, was right next to my computer.
What is that right next to your computer on the left side? That is unacceptable. Unaerial. Unacceptable. Get rid of it.
All right. Sorry. This was given to me from MMA bobblehead.
Put it behind the coffee cup or something.
So there you have it. That was earlier in the day, and Ben Askren announced his retirement on today's program as well. Happy to see that he's in good spirits, happy to see that he's at peace with this decision, and kind of crazy that we had – Mick was kind of joking about the fact – Mick Foley was joking about the fact that he came on right after Ben Askren, and then he actually had hip replacement surgery as well and was offering advice to Ben Askren. So maybe this can create some sort of friendship between the two, and he can offer some advice. And then you had Caesar, who visited Mick a few years back, went to one of his shows. So that was kind of nice. I don't know if there's a connection between Corey Sandhagen and Yoel Romero, but maybe we'll find out that there's a connection between the two. So in a matter of moments, we are hopefully going to be joined by Yoel Romero, who is number one contender, at least in the eyes of Israel Adesanya. He wants to fight him. We'll potentially get an update on whether or not they are going to fight now that Paulo Costa is still recovering from bicep surgery. There's pretty much two candidates out there, Jared Cannonier, Yoel Romero. UFC wanted Cannonier to fight Romero, but that means that Adesanya would be out for quite some time. He wants Romero. He's been talking about Romero, and it's very rare to have the champion call his shot. Very rare. In fact, Israel was in studio not that long ago talking about Yoel Romero. Here's what he had to say.
I want to f***ing fight the guy.
Okay.
But how are you going to sell a fight to the public that they know the guy lost three of his last four?
Right.
He sometimes decides to do things in a fight like stool gate.
Right.
You know,
misses
weight.
Right.
He's been pulling out a lot over the years. You know, how are you going to sell that to the people and say he deserves a shot at the champ?
So I've said this a couple times. Yeah, I guess you can make the case that because he missed weight a couple times, because he lost the title shots, that it doesn't make sense. Number one, Costa was the guy and bad things happened. He got injured and now he's not available. Number two, when you have the champion say, I want this guy, this is the fight I want, I want to prove that I'm tougher than this guy. If he's motivated to fight him, like, you don't have to convince him to fight. That's a good thing, right? In my opinion, just make the fight. It's a very sellable fight. I mean, they're back and forth. Did you see that video of Romero calling out or responding to the initial call out of Adesanya? Do we have that video as well? I love this video. I keep watching it over and over again. Here's that video in case you missed it.
Hey, Israel. What you say? I see you, boy. What you say? I see you soon, boy. No. You don't need to say something like this. Give me the day. Give me the day. Tell him that I don't know why. The day.
It's the best. I can't stop watching that video. I love it. And so there's a back and forth there. There's a little bit of bad blood, it seems. Just make the fight. That's the fight. Cannoneer certainly deserves it, but there's nothing really there at the moment. Darren Till telling me last week, by the way, and Darren Till was just phenomenal on Twitter all week long. Absolutely hilarious. The stuff with Romero, with the gif of the gorilla guy walking, and then when Romero replies, the gorilla turning around. But telling me that, you know, he wants Robert Whittaker. That's very clear. Although I wonder if they'll put Whittaker on that Auckland card. Maybe not. Maybe they'll put Dan Hooker in the main event. Because of course he trains out of New Zealand, but he told me that he wants Robert Whittaker, but if he can't get Robert Whittaker, he wants Jared Cannonier in a number one contender fight. So you do Israel against Romero, and then you can have Darren Till fight Cannonier. Whittaker is out there. Paulo Costa is going to come back at some point in time. And that's a, you know, that's a very easy fight to make whenever he's ready to come back. That's a fight that I think everyone wanted to see. But right now, if Israel says he wants Yoel Romero, I say give him Yoel Romero. So we'll connect with him in a matter of moments and see where he stands on everything. After Romero, we'll talk to James Krause, who had a phenomenal victory this past Saturday in Brazil against Sergio Moraes. He's won 6 in a row or 4 in a row, depending on how you view the tough fights. 6 in a row in the UFC in the cage, not including the tough fights. 4 in a row if you include the tough fights, and it's been quite the career turnaround for the James Krause. Also, we'll talk to Paul Craig, who fought to a split draw against Shogun Hua in the co-main event on Saturday. And we'll round out today's program with Bo Nickel, the 3-time NCAA wrestling champion from Penn State University and the 2019 Dan Hodge Trophy winner, who Ben Askren spoke about earlier, who said that he's going to have a great career, but I thought it was really interesting to hear Ben say. So one of the things that they announced when they announced that Bo Nickel was going to eventually make the transition over to mixed martial arts, a highly decorated collegiate wrestler from Penn State, is going to try out for the 2020 games first off. But then once that is done, transition over to mixed martial arts. One of the things that they announced was that they are going to open an American Top Team gym at Penn State. Happy Valley, right? I think it's called, it's called Happy Valley, but isn't it called like College Station or something like that?
State College.
Yes, that's right. I'm not much into the, collegiate sports, but anyway, State College. But I thought it was really interesting to hear Ben say that he thinks that that is actually a big mistake, that he needs to get out of his comfort zone. He needs to go to one of the big gyms, ATT in South Florida, aka in San Jose. Those are two that come to mind. And so I'm curious to see what happens there. No UFC event this weekend, as I mentioned at the top, but there is a really good Bellator card that I'm excited about. If you're into the European scene, and my friends Pete C and Niall do a great job of covering that for the Eurobash podcast, one of my favorite MMA podcasts, pretty much the only other one that I listen to. This is a great card. Do we have the lineup for the Bellator card this Saturday? It's in London, features the return of Michael Venom Page. You've got, well, that's this past Saturday in Friday. Actually, it was Thursday. It aired on Friday. It happened on Thursday. This is the fight card this Saturday. Michael Page is on it in the main event. Fabian Edwards against Michael Shipman. That's a real grudge match, years in the making, and is a big one in the European scene. Terry Brazier against Soren Bach, which is another fun fight. Charlie Ward, as you know, the good friend of Conor McGregor, also on the card. So unfortunately, this one is happening, I believe, during the afternoon here in the United States, airing via tape delay in America. But it is a good card. And with no UFC for the next couple weeks, there's no UFC this weekend, and then the weekend after Thanksgiving, and then they return December 7th, and then there's the December 14th card, UFC 245 in Las Vegas, and then the year ends December 21st in South Korea. That'll be the final event of 2019. So amazingly, there's only three UFC events left. December 7th is the one in Washington, D.C., Alistair Overeem against Jairzinho Rozenstruik. And they announced this past weekend that that event is going to be in honor of the late, great Stuart Scott. And then there's the event December 14th, 2:45, and then, of course, December 21st. All right, one guy who's itching to get back in there is the soldier of God, my good friend, Yoel Romero. Let's say shalom to Yoel right now. Shalom, Yoel. How are you, my friend? Are you doing okay, my friend?
Everything fine.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a lot to talk to you about, Yoel, because you've been in the news a lot these days. After Paulo Costa got injured, Israel Adesanya is saying that he wants to fight you. Are you going to get that title fight?
I stay ready for the fight because I have a I still really hungry, you know. I wanted this fight happen, you know, because many people talk. They're really the true. Who is the true? The true is who is the really champion for the middleweight. And the people know is who it is. No, because everybody see what happened the last three fights with the Habib before. Now Israel have the belt, and the people want to see who is the really champion, you know. I'm very excited. I'm very happy. I can give you the fight for everybody, for the fans, for the UFC.
Has the UFC offered you this fight yet? Because I heard that they wanted to do you versus Jared Cannonier as a number one contender fight because they're saying that you're coming off a loss. But have you or your management team been able to convince them that this is the fight to make right now, you versus Israel?
The UFC called my money. Malky called me and say something happened. Paulo Costa is injury. He can take the fight. Maybe he can fight for the long time. Now UFC thinking about you. You know what I'm saying? See, you ask me. I say that's what happened right now. The people say I am losing 3 fights. Yes, I lose 3 fights.
Yeah.
But when you ask the inside of you and you saw your Romero is still in the winner, you know. And now see, you see the way that happened. People want to see the really best people fight. Who is the best right now in the middleweight? Okay, but I fight everybody, and the best people in my division, the best fighters. I beat it. I not lose it. I beat everybody. You know, I feel like the day when I lose, I ready for the day for that I lose. You know, because everybody I have the beginning and everybody have the end and the career. You know,
mm-hmm.
But it's not my day now. It's not my day. I still training. I still. I still the hungry. The day when they coming, I lose it. I say, okay, today I lose it because it is what it is. It's me. I am really man. I'm not fake, you know. I stay in sport for a long time. I know the code. I know the code for the sport. for the real sport. I am the real sportman. No. The day when I lose, I say I lose. The day when I lose in the Olympic game, I lose. Everybody asks me, you lose it? Yeah, I lose it. Maybe somebody beating me, you know. But right now, nobody beating me in the UFC. In UFC, nobody beating me. Maybe three people. The last fight, three people. No Paulo Costa beating me. Three people beating me. Everybody know what I'm talking about.
Mm, the judges, right?
Everybody know, brother.
What do you think of Israel? Undefeated, 18-0, just stopped Robert Whittaker. Are you impressed by him?
I see the fight. I have a big respect for Robert Whittaker. The personal, you asked me about the Robert Whittaker, I have a big respect. It's not the same. It's not the same.
Because of you?
You have when you have a damage in your body, one day the damage is your soul or your spirit, you know, when you go to the fight. I know that Robert is the warrior, the real warrior, really fighter. But you need to know when you stay ready. You need to listen your body. You need to hear your body, because the body talk, you know. The body talk. You need to see, you need to hear. So you stay ready. You stay ready. I know he want to fight, because inside is the warrior, but it's not the same. It's not the same. You can see the punch where the Israel make it. Only like this. It's not boom. It's only like this. And you can see the eyes when he go down. It's so bad. I say, it's down. The second round, only maybe one jab. Whatever the Israel doing, I know it's down, because it's not the same. The body is so. The body is not the same. I don't know in English.
I understand. You're saying that his chin, he got worn down after the fights against you, right? 10 rounds.
His body is damaged.
The body for Robbie is damaged.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, did it bother you that Israel said, see you soon, boy? Because in the video you posted, you said, why do you say see you soon, boy? Do you feel like he was disrespecting you by using your line?
because everybody know me. Every fighter is with the fight with me. He know I am really mad. I know what is the you need to decode it. You need to respect, you know. And so you say I want to see you soon, boy, is because you want to fight me. Mm-hmm. Israel want to fight me. You need to not call me. You need to say. The president, the big boss for the UFC, I wanted this guy. You have it the bell, Israel. You have it the bell. See, you have it the bell, you need to say, hey, I don't want this guy. I don't want this. I want this guy. Believe me, the day is coming. The day when I have it, the bell in my, ¿cómo se dice cintura?
My waist.
When they have the belt in my waist.
Yeah. That's right.
When they have the belt in my waist. I don't want the nobody say me, hey, you need to fight this. You know, no. Give me the number one. Give me the best in the line. No, like un chico de figura.
Un chico de figura. No.
Como un chico que han creado algo, something like that.
Like a puppet.
No, I don't want it like a puppet guy.
Mm.
No. wanted the really world. I wanted the fight. I want, because it's me. I don't want the 11 win.
Sure.
Zero. No. You need to see who you beat. Who is this guy you beat? You know, who is the best? The best, this guy. He's like a, that's it. Remember, I am old man. My skill is a, like a old school, like a Muhammad Ali. I wanted the best. Muhammad, Joe Foreman. Muhammad, Joe Frazee. That is me. I don't want it like a poopy guy. No. Give me the best.
But he's, give me the best. He's calling you out. He's saying he wants to fight you. So isn't that good for you?
Well, that, I say, Danny, give me the day.
Let's go.
Put it the day. Give me the contract. Give me the contract now. I have it. I have it, the pen in my hand. Give me the contract. And now I do something like this. I seen it, the contract. Okay. And that's the way I do it, what happened. The fight's coming up. All right. Boom. All right. Dana, give me the day. And the people see. Because the really people, the fans for the UFC, the people know I am the champ. I am the really champ.
Do they want you to fight Jared Cannonier first? Are they trying to get you to fight him?
No.
So are you confident this fight is going to happen? You versus Israel next year? Early next year?
I think so, yes. See, Israel, because Israel... You hear what the Israel say when he talked to my brother Masvidal. He say, I want to fight him.
Yes.
Why he want to fight me? Because he know in the spirit, and you saw, he know who is the best in the middleweight category. He know.
It seems like he has a lot of respect for you.
I have a respect for him too.
Okay.
He's a good guy. He have a good talent. The people what I want to fight, you know, because every time when I fight the young guys, I say, oh my God, thank you God. You bless me, because I am almost 42 years old. I have beaten the guys. I beat the new talent, the young talent. I beat the everybody. I say, God, thank you. Thank you for giving me talent. I want to fight him. Yeah. Come on.
Let's go. Did you hear what Darren Till said about you recently? That he'd fight anyone on 185 except for you?
Yeah, I hear.
He has respect. He's a funny guy.
He's a funny guy. I have a respect for Darren Till too. But it is what it is. He's staying the line too.
But it's amazing. At your age, in your 40s now, people still revere you and fear you. These top guys, you know, like Darren Till, he says he wants nothing to do with you. Now, the Costa fight, does it still bother you? Like, have you had a chance to go back and watch it? Do you still get, you know, annoyed, bothered by what those three judges did? Robbing you of the decision, as you said?
I watched the highlight. I know I watched the old fight. I am a little mad with the judges. No, for the Paulo, you know, because when I stay. When we finished the fight, and we waiting for the decision, the coaches for Paulo come to me, and my coach, he say, good victory.
Oh wow!
Congratulations.
Wow.
And now when we stay in the middle, he say, Paulo win. For unanimous decision. I said, what? I said, okay. I understand everything. I'm not mad. I'm mad when that. What, you know when I'm mad?
Mm.
When I do something wrong, when I know good do something good, for example, see, I lose it because I not go training and not have a good preparation and got no good physical for the fight. I lose it. When I go back to the house, I am mad because I know I lose it because no training. You know something like this?
Mm-hmm.
But, or maybe I go to the fight and not doing what I need to do. Like, I scare when I go, I see the people, oh my God, no, he's so fast. He's so, and now when I go out, I como si se tengo vergüenza de mí.
I'm embarrassed of myself.
I am very embarrassed with myself.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
But no, it doesn't know the como si se no es el caso.
That's not the case.
But it's not the case. You know, it's not the case. It's because I beat him. I beat the guy. When the coach comment and say, congratulations, I say, oh my God, thank you, God. I'm still in shape. I'm still the best. Thank you, God. I am fast. Everybody see I'm not tired. People say, Romero don't have a good condition. Oh, really? I don't have a good condition. I'm 42. I'm almost 43 years old. I beat the young guys. And you say I don't have a good condition? What are you talking about?
Yoel, you want to give a message to Israel? He watches my show all the time. What do you want to say to Israel?
Give me the day, Israel. Push. So you want to fight the really best in the middleweight. You know, you have it, the belt. It's true. You here. You have it, the belt. I am the best. You have it, the belt. But I am the best in the middle. So you need it. Sleep. Quiet. Because I know you not stay quiet. Because you know you have the belt, but you know you know the champ. The champ is Joel Romero. Everybody knows this. I lose it, but I don't lose it with the fighters. Right. I'm gonna lose it with the judges.
Okay.
I don't know who's the politic. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what happened. I don't know who is the business. I don't know who is the business. I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to talk about this. Because myself, everybody know. So you have the balance, and you question on the wall. How many people say you are win and you are losing? Who is it? You are the number three now in the ranking, or you are the really champ? Maybe. No, maybe 100%. It's like this. You are the champ, the really champ. It's like this. Romero is the best. You can see, you know, what happened. And Israel is not sleep, no sleep. When they go to bed and stay like this and they sleep, he say, I need to fight this guy. I need to fight him. Because I need it myself, I need it in my spirit. And your soul, I need to say, I am the real champ. Because he know. The real champ in the middleweight, everybody know who it is. Why? Why he go to the Yes. Because he know. Everybody know. You know what I'm saying? That's
all. All right. I hope you get the fight. I'd love to see it, Yoel. Thank you, as always, for coming on. Good luck getting the fight. Good luck in preparation.
Shalom.
Shalom, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Israel.
There he
is. See you soon. Bye.
There you go. Perfect. There he is, Yoel Romero, the soldier of God. Amazing. I'd love to see that fight. Hopefully they get it done. All right, let's go back to this past weekend in Brazil. What a great moment. What a great scene. What a great fight. What a great performance for one James Krause in his first fight out of North America. Amazing. I think he's had something like 34 pro fights. First fight out of North America. There he is. James Krause, who defeated Sergio Moraes via TKO. Actually, I should say KO in the third round. Very late. There he is joining us right now via the magic of Skype. James, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing really well. Isn't that amazing? First fight out of North America. Why is this? How is this possible?
That's by design, actually. So typically you get like a double tax whenever you go out of the country. So in my head, I just don't see the point in getting taxed like an extra 15% to 30%. And then also giving up a disadvantage by travel, you know, just the plane, all that stuff. It just didn't make sense to me. So, Brazil recently lifted the double tax though, which is why I accepted the fight.
Oh, okay. And so the experience of fighting in Brazil, somewhat of a hostile territory against a Brazilian, what was it like? Like, do you prefer, like, your next fight, do you want to go back home now? Do you prefer that? Or did you like being on enemy territory, so to speak?
Yeah, I don't really care. I mean, at the end of the day, whenever you close the door, it doesn't really matter who has home field advantage, right? It's my team versus his team. And so that really doesn't bother me. And I always, like, I'm the guy that, you know, when Conor fights, the crowd starts singing and the Brazil, they start chanting. I'm the guy that loves that stuff. So, like, for me, when they start chanting, it's not a big deal. Even my coach he kind of made a joke about it. Somebody asked him what they were saying. He's like, they're cheering for us. So it's not a big deal to me at all.
So, you know, this is just kind of minutia stuff, but I'm curious where you stand on it. Are you on a 6-fight winning streak or a 4-fight winning streak? Because sometimes they include the tough fights, sometimes they don't.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, up until this last fight, it was 6. Now they're saying it's not. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. It's kind of irrelevant, right? I mean, I don't know. All I know is I'm 3-0 at this weight class in the UFC, and I've got 2 finishes there. So you know, that for me, and I've got 2 finishes over good guys. You know, Worley's tough, and Sergio's top 15 at one point. So I feel like I'm doing my job. You know, moving up in weight, and I definitely feel like 70 is my home. I feel good there. I feel healthy there. I can work there. You know, and I feel like everything is starting to fall into place for me.
So you've fought at 170 in the past, 155, of course, now back at 170. Why did you move, you know, up and down? And do you regret not just staying as a 170 pounder for the majority of your career?
Well, no. I mean, when I started, I was a lot smaller. I've gotten a lot bigger. I'm getting older. I'm 33 now. Not that that's old or anything, but in 5 years, I've been doing this for 13 years, a pro and amateur. I have 65 fights somewhere in there. So I've been doing this for a long time, and it just gets hard. You know what I mean? Like, it's not necessarily the year of the car, it's the miles, right? So I think that has a lot to do with it. But I went to 70 initially in the UFC because of The Ultimate Fighter. That's where that was the show that was at 170. So I fought there at 170. And then I went back to 55, I kind of pulled a win out my ass, and I had a terrible cut, felt awful for the fight. And I was like, man, I'm just going to give 70 a try. And so I went back to 70. I felt incredible. I fought a, you know, tough Worley Alves. I definitely felt like that is a accurate depiction of what I can do. And for the longest time at 55, I always felt like I was selling the media and the fans and even myself short, just because I feel like I was giving you guys an underrated or saturated product of myself. You know, like, I wasn't being able to perform to the best of my abilities. And I feel like at 70, I may be slightly undersized, but I really like physically what I can do there. I feel like I can work. I feel like my pace is high. I don't feel like these guys are any stronger than me. You know, if you watch the fight, it's not like they're moving me or anything like that. I've got 2 finishes in a row at 70, from strikes. So, you know, like, there's not much else I can say. It's working. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
So no secret also that you're a gym owner, you're a head coach for many fighters, in the UFC currently. You've kind of built up that Kansas City market, and become one of the faces of the MMA scene over there. How do you balance being a head coach / gym owner and being a pro fighter trying to accomplish your own goals as a pro fighter, and kind of having to be selfish there, but then being completely unselfish when you are a head coach? Is that difficult, or do you feel like you've figured it out now?
I'll let you know when I figure it out.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I have a pretty good system. It's I train my team year round. You know, I train. We have a good thing in Kansas City, man. Like, and I got a lot of criticism early for not leaving and going to one of the super gyms. And I said that I was going to be the guy to put Kansas City MMA on the map. And you know, I want to do that, and I feel like I've done a good job of that. We have guys in LFA, Bellator. We'll have some guys on Contender Series. Obviously, we have 4 or 5 people in the UFC right now. And, you know, I feel like we're finally starting to make that come up. You know, we're young and still in the game, but I do feel like we're starting to produce some really good talent. And I feel like what I do a good job at is I don't think balance is the word. I think prioritizing is the word. You know, obviously, like right now, my next guy is Grant Dawson. He's on January 18th. So I'll shift into helping him. And typically we just help each other. You know, we're not like, it's not like American Top Team or AKA where you have 75 guys in the room, right? Like there's like 5 or 10 of us like that are serious about it. It's more than that. It's probably 20. I would say we have 20 to 25 in our room normally. And we're all just trying to help each other, you know? So it's not like we don't have this big influx of people coming in and out. So we really have to focus on helping each other, and it kind of never really stops. We always help and prioritize around each other. It's not really like, you know, I go away and I do my camps and stuff like that, but I go away for like a week, 2 weeks at a time, then I'll come back, and then I'll go back out. And, you know, I'm never really gone for that long. A lot of times I'll bring my guys with me or you know, whatever I have to do to make it work. So I feel like the guys that we're producing are doing really well. And I feel like I'm doing really well, so it's working. And I think we just need to grow from here as a Midwest market, and you know, at Kansas City MMA as a whole.
Where do you go away to do your camps?
I go to Factory X Muay Thai in Denver.
Okay, so when you leave, is there someone else who's kind of running the show over there at Glory?
Yeah. Grant Dawson, man. He's young. He's a young kid. He's 2-0 in the UFC, 2-0 or 3-0? Gosh, I can't remember. 2-0, I think. That kid, whenever he's done fighting, he's going to be an absolutely amazing coach. He is an incredible coach, and he's one of those guys that is just absolutely obsessed with the game, kind of like myself. Like, just watches video all the time. He's very good at just because you're a good fighter doesn't make you a good coach, but he just knows how to break things down. His cage work is some of the best that I've ever felt. His ground and pound is probably the best I've ever felt. He's got some stuff that he is just absolutely phenomenal at, knows how to explain it really well. His fight IQ is amazing. And he's going to grow to be something really special. I'm just telling you guys that right now.
Have you always wanted to be a coach, or is this something that you kind of fell into?
So it's a little bit, I always call it the Wild West days. This is Kansas City is like the Midwest in general is not like Florida, California. I've been coaching since way before I should have been. I've been coaching since like 6 months after I started, just because like at that time you're talking about like a second grader playing against a first grader in basketball. Like it doesn't seem like that much, but the age difference or the experience difference just means so much. Even if it's 6 months, like I had 6 months of experience on these guys that were coming in, and I just, you know, just wanted to help people. I really enjoyed the sport. I loved everything about it, and I enjoyed teaching what I knew. I've always kind of been a leader / coach in everything that I do, so I just naturally gravitated to it. And then as I stayed in the sport, people fell out, and there's always an influx, but I always just kind of stayed in it, and, you know, I've gained experience. I've learned from Mark Montoya, my coach. I've learned so much from him, and then obviously other coaches. I've trained with numerous coaches around the world, and I feel like I'm a much better coach than I am a fighter. And I really truly believe that, and I think I've just kind of put together my own style. I definitely do believe that we'll have something very special one day.
Other than the move back up to 170, do you have a theory as to why you've been on this streak? I mean, let's just say it's the 6-fight winning streak. This is the longest winning streak of your career since 2013. And you've been doing it for so long, as you mentioned, but do you feel like there's another reason why you're doing so well these days?
Absolutely. It's Mark, my coach.
Okay.
He's, I don't, I can't speak for everybody else. He's very successful as a coach. That, you know, he corners somebody every weekend in the UFC, it seems like. So, but I can only speak for myself. He's obviously an amazing coach, for anyone that wants to come in. But I feel like for me specifically, everybody's kind of doing the same things to a certain degree, right? Like, everybody's teaching the jab cross hooks of the world. Coaches have different philosophies and different, like strengths, like some are grappling heavily, some are strike heavy, but where Mark is just absolutely incredible at is his leadership skills. And he's just a guy that every time that you step out there, like I seek for his approval, you know? So I want to do the best, not just for me, but for him, you know, 'cause I have to answer to that guy in between each round and after the fight. And I just want, I'm seeking his approval constantly, and he's just an incredible leader to me specifically, but also to everyone else. But I think for me, he is just amazing at pulling the absolute best out of me. He's kind of got me, I talk a lot more in my fights now. He's kind of helped me find my swag, as he calls it, helped me find my rhythm. And, I think we just click really well together.
How long have you been with him for?
Since that streak started.
Oh, really?
I haven't, other than if you count the Ultimate Fighter, if you don't count that, I have not lost a fight with him yet.
Wow. And obviously he wasn't in your corner in those fights.
Correct.
Wow. That's amazing. How much longer do you want to do this for?
Oh man, that's a really tough question to answer. I don't have a good answer for that. I feel like the media and, I've done some interviews already since the fight, and everybody's asking me what's next. You know, do I want top 15? And it's really difficult for me to answer those questions because I dedicate so much of this. I mean, I have a 2-month-old son that I've seen just a handful of times. 'Cause I mean, take my fight out of it. I was in Australia with Megan Anderson. I was in Boston with Sean Woodson. I went to, Denver for my training camp. Sao Paulo, obviously, for my fight. And then 2 weeks before that, I don't remember. So like I don't think I've been home a weekend for going on 6 or 7 weeks now. So it's just like, it's really hard for me to think about getting back in there and like, you know, and 3 or 4 times a year, whenever I'm just gone all the time. So like right now, all I want to do is just be home and, you know, hang out with the family during the holidays. And I'll worry about that later. But in terms of what you're asking, I don't have a good answer for that, man. Like, I'm in a great spot to where I don't have to fight to pay my bills. That's, something I'm very grateful for that I've kind of, created there. I don't know. I don't have that answer. For me, it's a here thing. Like whenever I get that itch to fight again, I ask for a fight. And if that itch never comes back, I won't ask for one.
Okay. Is that possible? Not at this point, right?
Yeah.
It is possible.
Yeah. Anything's possible. Yeah.
Really?
I mean, it's easy to say that now, right? 'Cause I'm riding the high of, 6-fight win streak, knockout, victory in enemy territory, all that bullshit. But like, yeah, the reality of it is, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. I don't want to be the guy that, I'm sitting next to my coach or my friend. And he has to like nudge me and say, yo, man, I think we should hang this up. You've lost 2 or 3 in a row. And my God, sorry. I've lost 2 or 3 in a row. You know, I just don't want to be that guy, man. So like it's hard to retire on top, but it's something that I'm very, very adamant about doing. The problem is define what on top means. I don't know what that means. And I don't know, man. I wish I had an answer for that. I wish I had that answer. You know, I've tried to put like a definitive, I've tried everything. It's hard. This is one of the hardest sports in the world to quit, right? 'Cause it's the highest highs and the lowest lows. Nobody wants to quit off that high, and nobody wants to quit off the low either. Right. So, I just want to make sure that when I'm done, I would rather people say, man, he quit a little too early than he quit a little too late. You know,
what are the chances that was your last one?
I don't know, man. I honestly, Eric, I wish I could answer that for you. I already know I'm going to have calls, you know, saying when's the next one. And just from management and Mark, my coach, they all want me to fight, but they get it too. You know what I mean? Like, it's a tough one. I really don't know the answer to that. I don't know. I'm sure I'll fight again, you know, but I don't know when, I don't know who, you know, that's always the, like the X factor for
right.
me. is, you know, what that looks like. And I can't really answer it until I get that feeling back, you know, cause I don't need to fight to pay my bills, and I'm not going to, right? So like, if I don't get that itch, that burning desire to get back in there and to compete, I feel like you see that all the time. Like the veterans, they just, like it gets harder because the recovery is a little bit more difficult. And I feel that now. I don't recover like I used to, obviously. I'm 33 years old. And, you know, so they train a little less and they try a little less harder and they spar a little less and they roll a little less. And like, you just see it like progressively chop to the career until you have that conversation where you got a nudge to do and be like, man, you should have hung it up. And you see it this weekend, man. Like there's almost every weekend there's somebody on the card, and I don't have to say who it is. Y'all know, yeah. I already know who I'm talking. There's a couple.
Yeah.
That would be like, man, you should have hung it up a couple times ago. I just don't want to be there, man. I just don't want to be in that position. I don't care how old I am or how many fights I have in the UFC or what accolades anybody thinks I should have or could have had. I could give a shit less about that stuff. So I want to make sure that when I retire on my terms. I don't want somebody else saying, I don't want somebody else telling me when I'm done. That's not how it's going to work. So I want to make sure that I'm the decision maker on that. I don't want to have, you know, Sean have to call me and be like, yo, we're cutting you or whatever. You know, I don't want to have that conversation. So, that's really difficult for me to answer that.
I understand. And I appreciate the perspective. And I feel like this is like a window into why you are such a good coach. Cause I don't think a lot of active fighters, 33 on a streak that you're on coming off a knockout would speak like this. But I think that you're a lot, I think, more mature than your typical 33-year-old fighter. And I think that that's why you've become such a good coach. Like I really love watching you in the corner and listening to how you speak to the fighters, and your demeanor and your tone is really great. And I think you're going to be a tremendous coach in the future as well. So you're doing great, my man. And I just wanted to wish you congratulations on your success, not only as a coach, but as a fighter as well. It's cool to see you after all those years in WEC and, you know, the ups and downs. You're really doing well these days. So congratulations.
It's been a long road, man.
It
has been a really long road. It definitely hasn't been easy, but I'm really happy with where I am. And, I'm happy if that was my last fight, I'm happy with what I've done with my career. And, I'm really more so, I'm looking forward to what I'm going to do with other people's careers. You know, I think there's some really great talent that we have. And, man, I'm really excited. Whatever that looks like, you know, I don't know, man. Like I said, I don't know, but I love this game. I know that I'm going to be involved in it one way or another. If that's me fighting one more time, zero times or 10 more times, like, I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that I'm going to be involved with this sport, very heavily for the rest of my life.
Thank you for the time, James. Appreciate it very much. Congrats on the win and all your success. And, we'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate your arrow. Thank you very much, man.
All right, there he is, James Krause, coming off that great KO with, what, just like 41 seconds remaining, if my math is correct, on Saturday in Sao Paulo, 41 seconds remaining in the third round. Victory over Sergio Moraes, Swirly Alves, Alex White, Tom Galicchio, Shane Campbell, Darren Cruikshank. Those are the six in a row in the UFC. He's done some great things in and out of the cage, so to speak, with the team over there in Missouri. Glory MMA and Fitness has a lot of great fighters coming up from there. And if you have an opportunity to listen to him in the corner, he's one of the best young coaches in the game. So congratulations to him on everything that he has accomplished. Now, another big story this past Saturday, co-main event ended in a split draw. Two draws on the card, as a matter of fact. That is very rare. It was Shogun against Paul Craig. And in the first round, it seemed like maybe Shogun was done, but he was able to weather the storm, come back, and it ended, as I said, in a draw. So let's get Paul's reaction to that. He is fresh off the plane, back home in Scotland, I believe. We appreciate him doing this. He's probably really tired and jet-lagged right now. So thank you very much for jumping on the show, Paul. We appreciate it.
No, thank you for your time, man. I always appreciate coming on here.
So a little less than 48 hours removed. How do you feel about the decision, the split draw?
You know, straight after the fight, I was really disappointed with myself because I had the energy to stand up in that last round to get that takedown. Why didn't I do that sooner? And I maybe could have secured that victory rather than the draw. But after I reflected back, I had spoke to my coaches to come away with a draw from Shogun Hua in Brazil. It's not to be sniffed at.
if you were okay, well, let me ask you first. Have you watched the fight again?
I've not watched it because we ended up having the fight, and then we ended up going out having a few celebratory beers, and then we were straight on the plane straight after that, and then a couple hours to get home. So that's me. I'm literally, as you said, just in the door.
Okay, so here are the judges' scorecards as you may see them right now.
Yep.
Sal D'Amato gave rounds 2 and 3 to Shogun. Marcelo Villena gave rounds 1 and 3 to you. And then Guilherme Bravo scored it a draw, gave you a 10-8 in the first round. If you were to, you know, maybe put your unbiased hat on, how would you have scored that fight?
You know, I agree with the third judge there that says it was a 10-8. I believe that if you're able to, if a fight's getting close to being stopped, which I believe it was in that first round, then it should be a 10-8. I also felt that fight could have easily been stopped in that first round. There was a few unanswered shots, and that's where the marking in his face happened. I should have been smarter and not had given it my all in that round so I could had the 2 rounds, but, you know, that's my inexperience, and that's Shogun's experience that seen him through this fight.
How was your cardio going into that second round? Did you feel like you had emptied the gas tank?
I definitely felt like I had been in a tough cardiovascular output. I wish it was better. 3 weeks is not a... You can't do wonders with your cardio. So, in hindsight, we get this fight, my cardio will be much better.
So is that what you want? Are you campaigning for an immediate rematch?
Yeah, why not? Did you enjoy the fight?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yep, so it's an exciting fight. And I think the second version of this fight could be even better. See me much fitter and much more ready.
Fighting a legend like Shogun, one of the last of the pride greats still fighting in the UFC. What was that like to fight him? Not only just to fight him, but to fight him in Brazil, in his home country. What was the experience like overall?
You know, every single fight I go in, he's an experience for me. This is all new to me. I know that was my 9th fight in the UFC, but it's all relatively new to me. So as you're saying, getting to share the octagon with a guy who has been a world champion, has seen everything, dealt with everything, and get a draw against him, that is a good shout for me. But I won that win. As I said in my post-fight interview, I wanted to retire him. I wanted to be his last fight. And I believe we have some unfinished business, and I believe I could still be that last fight.
Why did you want to retire him?
You know, nobody ever remembers who Shogun, well, maybe they do, but the in-between fights, everybody remembers the first fight and his last fight or any big, amazing fights. And I want to be that last fight to be remembered for the guy who put Shogun Hu away. You know, not that I don't like being remembered for the guy with the latest submission in the UFC, but, you know, I'd like to be that guy that finished Shogun.
So when you say that, is it out of respect that you say that? You want to be the last guy on his resume, or is it because, like, yeah, I want to be the guy to finish him and kick him out of the UFC type of thing?
No, it's nothing like the latter there. It's all about respect. He's a pioneer of the sport, and all I've got for him is respect. Respect he took that fight in short notice. Respect that he allowed me to have that opportunity to share the octagon with him. So I'm very respectful to what he's granted me.
Were you surprised at how tough he was at this age, all the damage he's taken throughout his career? Were you surprised, especially in that first round, that he was able to absorb that much damage?
Yes. As I said, that was because he has seen everything, done everything. His experience saved him in that first round. He stayed tight, stayed covered up, was able to ride that storm, and then was able to muster in the second round and take me down and lie on top of me and stop me from doing my game plan.
Mm. So it sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that on the night itself, you felt disappointment. You felt like you had let one slip away. But here we are 2 days later, and you see a silver lining in the split draw.
Yes. Every cloud has a silver lining, as they say. and getting to share the octagon with Shogun Hu again is that silver lining. He said he wants it, and I would love to have him come to Scotland and fight me.
And you also mentioned you took this fight on relatively short notice, like around 3 weeks' notice. And I understand that your last fight back in September, that was the final fight on your UFC contract. So I'm imagining that you re-signed a new deal, correct?
Yes, I signed another 4 fights. So I get to live this dream for another couple of months.
And so did you sign that new deal before you got the Shogun fight, or was that part of taking the Shogun fight?
No, we had, Mick Maynard had told us we were getting a contract. And then just around about the same time, this opportunity came up and we bit the hand off Mick Maynard for it.
Okay. So you didn't have any interest in testing the water, so to speak. You wanted to remain in the UFC?
Yep. I'm not interested in, like, obviously money makes this sport a lot easier, but it's not the driving force for me in this sport. You can always make money. You can't make memories.
So for you, it's UFC or bust?
I said that to you previously. I can't justify taking the damage that the UFC does for anything less than the best.
When you started your career, you had that long run. I think you were 9-0 to start as a professional. But now it's been like one loss, one victory, one loss. It's been this rotation. Why do you think that is? Is it because you are fighting the best now? Do you feel like you need to do something different to try to go on another streak here? Why do you think it's been a little harder to go on a winning streak these days for you?
I think it's a combination of the fights I'm taking, the guys I'm sheer knocked on with are a much higher level than my previous 8 who I had beaten the first round. Now I'm going up against world-level fighters, and they're more challenging. I believed that I was going on a tear after this fight. That's what I had that in my head. After my win in Mexico City, I believed I was going to go on a tear.
And so, I mean, this isn't a loss, so you could still say that you're unbeaten in your last 2, so it's not the worst thing in the world.
No, it isn't. It isn't. And it's, you know what? Having that plane ride coming home and not being a loser is much better.
That's right. Now, did you have any acai over there while you were in Brazil?
Yes, I had many acai.
It's tremendous, were, right?
It's like, I wasn't sure if I was calling it right. It's acai. I was calling it acai, and I was like, can I have one of the acai smoothies? Obviously, the guys looking at me like, what's this Scottish fool up to?
Yeah. Have you ever had it outside of Brazil, or was that the first time you've ever had it?
No, that was broke my virginity with it in Brazil.
That was your maiden voyage. Now, if you ever have it outside of Brazil, I can assure you it's a completely different food. Don't even bother. I've never tasted a food that is so different in one place in its origin as opposed to other places. Like, if you have it here in the United States, it's horrible. It tastes nothing like what it is in Brazil. It's incredible over there. Like, when I go, I'll go like 6-7 times to the same place just to have it. It's divine. I mean, it feels like God's food, right?
It was delicious, and I ended up having like one every day.
Oh yes,
just a wee vitamin boost. Also, the fruit is so much fresher there.
Yes,
obviously we stay in a very, very cold climate, so all our fruit is imported, whereas it's pretty much coming off the trees and into your belly. So the fruit was amazing.
Would you like to fight back in Brazil? Sometimes you talk to someone who goes there and is like, "Eh, you know, I did it once, I'm good." Overall, like, did you find it hard to cut weight? Did you find it hard to get around? Would you prefer to fight closer to home?
I would love to fight in Brazil again. My main discipline is Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and to get to be in the country where it originates from is amazing. So opportunities to fight in Brazil again, I'd definitely take them. But I would like to fight in Glasgow.
Yeah.
I've got some unfinished business with that. You know, then my first fight in my hometown didn't go so well. I would like to rectify that.
And by the way, is that your guitar next to you over there? On the other side?
That is.
That is.
You know, I'm obviously looking.
You play?
I dabble.
Okay. Anything?
Under pressure.
I was just going to ask. Anything you want to play for us? You want to play us out here?
No, I really couldn't. I would disappoint your fans.
Oh, okay.
And, you would never have me back on.
All right, fine. And by the way, are you doing this full-time now?
Yep.
It's all...
Full-time fighter.
Okay.
Part-time lover.
But no kilt these days, by the way. I don't see the kilt as much.
It's, you know, well, the reason is, I'd love to say it's because there's a massive reason behind it. It's just it takes up too much space in my suitcase.
All right. Well, that's another reason to play closer to home so you don't have to pack it. Well, great fight, entertaining fight. I'm sorry you didn't get the W, but it would be fun to see it again, especially with a full training camp. We'll find out what the future holds for Shogun. I reached out to him as well to see if he wanted to come on the show, but he's taking some time off, so we shall see. But thank you for doing this. Great to talk to you again, my friend, especially after the long trip home. We really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure, my friend. Have a good evening.
All right, same to you. There he is, Paul Craig, the pride of Scotland, coming off that hard-fought battle with the legend Mauricio Shogun, who has split draw in the co-main event this past Saturday. All right, one guest to go. Let's end with him. Right now, he is ready. So he is a three-time NCAA national champion. He is a Danny Hodge Award winner 2019, so the most recent one. He is the pride of Penn State University and very recently announced that he will be making the transition in the near future to mixed martial arts once his amateur wrestling days are done. He is Bo Nickel, and he's kind enough to join us right now via the magic of Skype. Crystal clear Skype. Wow, look at that. Bo, how are you?
I'm doing well. Well, Ariel.
It's good to have you on the show. Thank you very much. So I'm curious about this. You're still gunning for the 2020 Olympic team. You're still in the midst. You just won the under 23. Congratulations. Why announce now that eventually you are going to make your transition to MMA? Why did you do now as opposed to when you were done?
Well, it's coming up pretty soon, you know. So, I mean, the Olympics are less than a year from now. So I figured that right now is a good time to announce it. And, you know, I'm still obviously focused full time on wrestling. I'm not doing any MMA training, but, you know, as soon as the Olympics are over, I'll be training full time. So I figured that now would be a good time to announce and let people know what the plan is.
How long have you been thinking about this?
Well, I followed MMA as a sport for years, you know, since I was in middle school. I feel like I started giving it serious consideration maybe 3 years ago, you know, probably my sophomore year in college. I started considering it as a serious, you know, career. And, you know, since then, I would say like when I made the decision to transition for sure would be about a year ago. So
have you talked to any other high level wrestlers who made the transition? There's no shortage of them. I'm wondering before making the decision that you were going to do this, if you, you know, went out and seek the advice of any of these guys.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of high level wrestlers that transitioned. I mean, I feel like that most of the wrestlers that, you know, do well in wrestling transition pretty well. So there's been a few guys that have given me advice and stuff. Ben Askren, I think he was on your show earlier, and you know, Cormier, Stipe, different guys like that. So I've talked to quite a few wrestlers.
So last week when you made this announcement, you also announced that you'll be opening up an American Top Team affiliate close to Penn State where you live. And I actually, you know, actually Ben brought this up on his own because I asked him about you and, you know, how he thought you would do in MMA. And he said that I want to know if he was telling me the truth. I feel like he was. He said that, oh, actually we have the sound. Here's what I want to play you, what Ben said about you training closer to home and your transition to MMA. And then I want to get your reaction to that. Okay.
Okay.
What do you think of his prospects?
He's gonna be good.
Yeah.
He's going to be very good, I would assume. The one thing, and listen, I told him this straight to his face. I don't like, he's starting a gym in State College, Pennsylvania, because that's comfortable for him.
Mm.
That's where he goes to college. That's where he likes everyone. Man, unless he can somehow get the funds to get really good coaches and really good training partners there, I think that's kind of a mistake. I think he should probably go to one of the bigger gyms somewhere, at least for a few years till he can establish himself and then maybe move back to where he wants to move to. And I told him that.
So how do you feel about that? A, did he in fact say that to your face? And B, what do you think of that criticism?
Yeah, I think that I agree with him. You know, if I couldn't get good coaches out here and I couldn't get good training partners out here, I wouldn't do it. But I feel like personally that I'm going to have great coaches out here with the ATT connection, and I'm also going to get great training partners with that same connection. In addition to the fact that so many guys are going to want to come here to train wrestling. I mean, obviously, it's pretty clear that wrestling is the most dominant discipline in the sport. And so, you know, just having that hotbed of wrestling in the area is going to, I think, attract a lot of people. And, you know, I agree with what you're saying. Absolutely. The main reason that I even came to Penn State in the first place was for the partners and for the coaches. So I understand the importance of that. And, you know, I'm also not afraid to travel and train I don't have to be here, you know, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So I'm not afraid to travel and go find the best guys to train. You know, I did the exact same thing growing up in wrestling, and so I agree with what he's saying for sure.
And so will you go around, like, will you go to the American Top Team in South Florida now that you're affiliated with them? Is that part of the plan as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be down there training with the guys and, you know, learning and teaching some wrestling and stuff. So I'll definitely be down there.
How did that partnership happen? Like, why ATT?
I was introduced to Dan Lambert through my manager. And, you know, I went down to Florida and visited the guys and met the coaching staff. I met, you know, Mike Brown and Dan and all the guys down there. And I really clicked well with them. And I felt like they approached MMA a very similarly to the way that I approach wrestling, the way that my coaches approach wrestling. And so I felt like it was a pretty instant connection. And I just really liked those guys. And I got to see the resources that they had with their facilities and all the awesome fighters that they have and the awesome coaches and people. So, you know, I was definitely super excited to be able to create that relationship.
And you've got another Hotch Trophy winner over in South Florida, right, at ATT, Steve Mocco as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's an awesome coach. I actually got to roll around with him a little bit when I was down there, so that was a lot of fun. I think that the way that he wrestles transitions very well into MMA, so I'm excited to be able to learn from him.
You mentioned your manager, so you've signed with First Round Management, the infamous Malki Kawa, very colorful, boisterous character in our sport. Why did you end up signing with him?
I felt like the way that I saw my career going and the way that I like to plan, it just aligned a lot with his vision, and it just made a lot of sense to me. I felt like, you know, that was just we had the same idea for my career, both of us. And, you know, I'm kind of a guy that likes to, I like to plan ahead. I like to make sure that I'm thinking, you know, 1, 2, 3 steps ahead and, you know, 5 and 10 years down the road. So I felt like we kind of aligned in that, and it was just, it made sense to me.
Your head coach at Penn State, arguably the greatest American wrestler of all time, the great Kel Sanderson. Did you talk to him before making this decision? Did you get his advice?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my coaches, I've been with them now going on 6 years, and I trust them so much. You know, they obviously helped me get to this point, and I wouldn't be there without them. And so, you know, I seek out their advice constantly. And Coach Kel, he was a little hesitant at first because he just wants me to stay in wrestling, which makes sense. I mean, he's my wrestling coach. But at the same time, he was super supportive, and he's always supportive of, you know, any guy on the team, whatever their goals are, whether that's in wrestling or in life, he's super supportive of that. So he's I'm excited to be able to stay here and continue to be around the coaching staff and on the wrestling team, and continue to, you know, grow as a wrestler also, and then, you know, transition to MMA in about a year.
When you say that he wanted you to stay in wrestling, like, how could someone in your position, if you stay in wrestling for several years, like, how do you make a living doing that? You can't turn pro, right? I mean, you could go for the Olympics and you could be in tournaments and whatnot, but could you really, like, is there really life after, you know, winning, you know, winning the Hodge Trophy, winning the national championships? What could you really do to earn a living? Become a coach? Is that the best thing?
Well, actually, the way that wrestling is going nowadays, there's a lot more money in the sport than what there was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And so we have what are called regional training centers that are affiliated with the colleges. So pretty much every big school has one. You know, Penn State, obviously, Iowa, Oklahoma State, Ohio State, they all have what's called regional training centers where guys are paid to stay and train and continue to pursue their world championship aspirations and Olympic aspirations. So it's a little different than what it was back in the day now with the regional training centers, and people have a lot more opportunity to stay and train. And, you know, I don't really need to transition to fighting in order to earn a living at all. So I would be perfectly comfortable competing in wrestling and stuff. So it's not really about that for me, but, you know, obviously MMA has a lot larger audience and a lot more people watching, just a bigger world. So there definitely is more money in MMA, but, you know, wrestling, it's not like there's nothing out there for people. You know, there's an opportunity there.
Now, let's say you make the Olympic team, all goes well, you win a gold medal, all goes great in Japan. You're only 23 years old. Like, why not try to go for another one, stick around 4 years? Is that not of interest at all to you?
Well, I think that right now I just – personally, I'm ready to, you know, like you said, make the Olympic team, win an Olympic gold medal. And that's been my goal since I was 8 years old. You know, I remember writing that down in goal books and stuff. And so once I do that, then I'm excited to be able to, you know, move on to new things. And MMA is just fun and exciting for me because I've been wrestling almost 20 years now. And, you know, with MMA transitioning, there's obviously so many different disciplines. There's jiu-jitsu, there's, you know, all the different striking aspects. And just to be able to have the opportunity to learn so much more is super exciting for me. And, you know, I could see myself going back to wrestling at some point, maybe for the 2024 Olympics. But right now, just in my heart, what I want to do is transition to fighting. And, you know, I still love wrestling. I still always am going to appreciate that base that I have. And that's always going to be part of me. You know, I could see myself going back into wrestling and coaching someday. But I'm excited for new challenges at this point. Once I'm done with this Olympic cycle.
How was this news received in the wrestling community? Like, is this something that the wrestling community frowns upon when one of their guys goes over to MMA? I know it's a common thing, as we said, and you're not the first
right.
by far, but I'm just curious, since it's been a week or so, what kind of feedback have you received?
I would say it's 50-50, you know, because a lot of wrestling fans are also big MMA fans, which is cool. So, you know, those people will transition over to MMA with me as well. But, you know, a lot of people obviously want to continue to watch me wrestle and compete and stuff. I think that at the end of the day, you can't really please everybody, you know. So obviously there's going to be some people that are, you know, purists, I guess, of the sport, and they want me to stay. But I'm just going to do what I truly feel like I want to do. And right now that's continue to train through this Olympic cycle and then transition over. And I hope that the fans that I have that came from wrestling will maybe look at the sport a little differently, the sport of MMA a little differently, and maybe start to follow MMA and kind of transition over with me.
Have you been punched in the face yet?
Yeah, I've been punched in the face. So I have, you know, I grew up just messing around with my friends, fighting, boxing, stuff like that. And I have a lot of friends that are on the boxing team here at Penn State, you know, collegiate national champions and stuff like that. So I like to get in there and spar with them. So yeah, I've been hit a few times.
Okay. So you're comfortable doing it because, you know, it's all fun and games. And then someone goes in and it's like, I don't really like getting punched in the face. This isn't very fun. Not to suggest
right.
that wrestling is easy by any stretch, but it's a whole different ball game. Have you done any like jiu-jitsu or anything like that?
Yeah, I've rolled a few times, just kind of messing around, you know, nothing super serious training because obviously I'm committed to wrestling. I'm
yeah.
full time with wrestling, and so I haven't really done any serious training. But you know, sometimes I'll travel and there'll be a local gym that I'll like maybe teach a clinic at, and they'll have jiu-jitsu lessons as well. And so I'll go in and roll with the guys that are there. So yeah, I've done a little bit.
All right. Well, I wish you the best, my man. Good luck in this journey. Good luck, you know, with the Olympic journey first, making that team, and of course in Tokyo. And then of course, as you transition over to mixed martial arts, I know a lot of people in the wrestling community are very excited about this, and you certainly have a lot of people behind you. So I wish you the best. Thank you for doing this, and good luck to you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. There he is, Bo Nickel. Remember that name. There's been a lot of great wrestlers who have made their transition from wrestling at Penn State to mixed martial arts. Ed Ruth comes to mind. Phil Davis comes to mind as well. There are some of his notable items on the resume. And also not mentioned on that little full screen over there, tremendous hair. Really great hair, in my opinion, at least. I mean, it's really wavy. It's really nice. So I think Ben's criticism was really interesting. Perhaps he can change that. I understand what he's saying about getting out of your comfort zone. And so we'll see what happens. First, he has to get through the Olympic training and trying to make that team. And then only really start seriously talking about him, you know, maybe around this time next year. Curious to see if someone like Bellator, much like they did with someone like Aaron Pico, try to sign him beforehand to get him early and then try to develop him. You know, they haven't done that as much these days, but certainly someone that you should keep your eye on. There haven't been a lot of Hodge Trophy winners who have made the transition. I believe only Askren and Mako are the only two off the top of my head. So certainly someone to keep your eye on. Just a couple of things before I go. It was reported on ESPN.com by our colleague Brett Okamoto that Derek Lewis versus Aliyar Latifi is happening on February 8th. They haven't officially announced that card is going to be in Houston, but that's where it seems to be trending towards. So
it would be nice for Derek Lewis to be back home in his adopted hometown of Houston, Texas. They've been talking, I've heard, about potentially Valentina Shevchenko defending her title against Caitlin Chookagian on that card, but that isn't done yet. And so I'm curious, where does John Jones fit into all of this? Where does Israel Adesanya fit into all of this? Where does Shevchenko? There's a lot of champions, as I wrote last week, who are available. There's three champions defending their title on December 14th, and then every other champion is available. And so I think we're going to see an influx of champions defending their belts in the early portion of 2020. By the way, speaking of December 14th, Las Vegas, UFC 245, make sure you keep December 13th open on your calendar. More to come, but it's going to be fun. Hint, hint. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. All right? Just letting you know in advance. December 13th, Las Vegas. If you're going to 245, if you're on the fence about 245, make sure you get off the fence. Trust me on this. Okay? All right. It's been a fun day. Thanks to all of you as always. Always love spending my Monday afternoons with all of you. Thanks to all our guests as well. Thank you very much to Junior Dos Santos. What a great story. And good luck to him in the dancing. Gosh. If we could only all have moves like JDS. The guy is so spry on his feet. Thank you very much to him and good luck to him on January 25th. Thank you very much to Ben Askren and congratulations to him on a phenomenal career. Happy trails. Appreciate him coming on and breaking that news, and what a career it was. Nothing to be ashamed of. Nothing to hang his head down about. It's been an amazing run and we wish him the best with his hip as well. Thank you very much to Mick Foley. Go check out The Peanut Butter Falcon. Great film. Thank you very much to Cesar Gracie. Good luck to Corey Sanhagen on January 25th. Thank you very much to Yoel Romero. James Krause, congratulations. Thank you very much to Paul Craig. And thank you to Bo Nickel as well. Back next week, same time and place. Until I say peace, I'm out of here.